and the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the cosmos. All these time zones, all of them covered one way or the other. That's quite a statement to make for a radio program. All the time zones covered one way or the other. And that's true. This is Coast to Coast AM, weekend version. I'm Art Bell. Honored to be escorting you through this great weekend. I love these messages from the internet. They come up on Past Blast. If you're on our website, you can send one off to me. And this is Ross in Salt Lake City, Utah, saying, getting close to the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. I am scared. Armageddon approaches. I don't know why it hit me. Just short and sweet, the way a lot of good messages are. Getting closer to the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. I am scared. Armageddon approaches. Oh, gee. The photograph on my webcam this night is of the USS San Francisco. If you haven't seen it yet, this is the officially released version of what happened to the San Francisco when she plowed into a mountain, you recall, shortly after the tsunami. And an underwater mountain. And you have to wonder how it made it back. I guess a testament to airtight doors, locking doors, that kind of thing. Anyway, take a look. The damage is extensive indeed. If it was your car, they'd probably total it. And they probably will total it. And the insurance company will open their wallets out there, ladies and gentlemen. That would be you. There's finally, what I consider to be good news from Iraq. It is good news. Iraqis apparently embraced democracy in large numbers. Actually, numbers that we could never turn out. 57% of Iraqis were forecast to vote, and they're saying the turnout was perhaps beyond that. That even more Iraqis turned out than 57%. Now, I would say that's pretty damn good. Here in the heart of democracy, where we all now pretty much take it for granted why we just were so, I don't know, it's just so something we take for granted. Something you should never do with freedom and democracy, but we do, and so not as many go to the polls, but boy, a minimum of near 60%, or maybe when the final numbers get in, even better. Pretty good, I would say. A British C-130 military transport plane crashed Sunday north of Baghdad. Scattered wreckage over a very large area. At least 10 troops were killed. Britain's Press Association news agency says the crash occurred at about 5:25 p.m., about 20 miles northwest of Baghdad. President Bush called Sunday's elections in Iraq a success and promised the U.S. will continue trying to prepare Iraqis to secure their own country. Quote, the world is hearing the voice of freedom from the center of the Middle East, end quote. And it is an achievement when you think about it. An election in the middle of the Middle East. How unlikely is that? The U.S. occupation authority in Iraq was unable to keep track of about $9 billion it transferred to government ministries. It just... Well, it lacked financial controls, and this $9 billion just... administrative something or another's. With very little time left before his organs would likely fail, a U.S. Marine received a new liver Sunday for a mysterious ailment that doctors said would kill him if he didn't get a transplant. Doctors operated on Lance Corporal Chris LeBeau, who had been in a coma and on life support for nearly 12 hours Sunday after an unidentified donor from New Mexico was found late Saturday night in the nick of time. About 102 customers had no electricity Sunday in Georgia. You may have seen the pictures on CNN of an ice storm there, and of course cars weren't going anywhere and it was a mess, and 120 customers had no electricity. A local phone giant, SBC, get this, has agreed to acquire AT&T. Good old AT&T has now itself been acquired. Can you believe it? It's like is like the last. I mean, AT&T, they are now acquired by SBC, about $16 billion to get that job done. You may recall last night, my guest last night, and the weather, right? In a moment, I have a story that came in today, literally today, that backs up exactly what he was saying. In fact, if you heard last night's show and did a little investigation on your own, what you are about to hear is going to stand your hair right on end. Or not. Now, bearing in mind what my guest had to say last night, this will blow you away. This is from a staff reporter on the India Daily, and it's dated January 30th. All right? Headline is, in every country of the world, all of a sudden, the weather forecasting computer models are failing. Human or extraterrestrial hand in weather manipulation. Hello? Over the past years, China has installed 74 sets of the world's advanced Doppler weather radar with 87% put into operation. But in the last year, all of a sudden, the weather forecasting computer models have failed so badly that China has now decided to install 30 more of the devices rapidly this year, with a satellite launch later this year expected to start its own operations soon. Now this is, it's the same story, echoed in every part of the world, from India to America. Weather forecasting models are just failing. Failing. And the variation patterns are so obvious that forecasters all over the world are scratching their heads. The world is experiencing some extreme weather, indeed, and weather forecasters in all parts of the world are just failing for reasons unknown to all. In India, for example, scientists were astonished at the National Center for Medium-Range Weather Forecasting. They were perplexed by the deviations of the weather from that predicted by the Doppler reports. In other words, the radar, the Doppler is actually saying this is about to happen, but then it doesn't. Sound familiar? In Russia, authorities are just as perplexed with the bizarre patterns of snowfall. In America, the weather forecasters are similarly perplexed in their inability to tell people what's going to happen the next day. The reason hurricanes and typhoons all over the world have taken irregular patterns and unpredictable paths, defying all established computer models. In India, China, Africa, Europe, all over the world, the same story is repeating. In every country, the meteorologists are thinking that those anomalies are just present in their region. But it is global and increasing every day. The intensity of the storms and the paths all over the world, especially in America's Florida and Southeast, including the Gulf of Mexico, are just plain bizarre. The Bureau of Meteorology, Australian government, is also perplexed by what's going on. Another interesting phenomena that is becoming very obvious is that many of the storms all over the world last year went into merry-go-round patterns and picked up speed and force before they made landfall. Is all of this putting the same chill down your spine? It is mine. There's a possibility that massive weather manipulation experimentation is taking place, which is totally classified. Military research projects involving weather manipulation is nothing new. Many countries are racing toward achieving the capability. So there you have it. That is the bulk of the story. You can read the whole thing if you want from the India Daily. And it's dated today, January 30th. I would say, after last night's guest, who I thought was a brave man stepping out on an issue that a lot of people would go with just another crazy thing on coast to coast. Well, let me tell you, a lot of so-called crazy things on coast to coast AM happened to turn out to be absolutely true. You just hear them first here, and that's not to say everything you hear here is necessarily true or is going to come to pass. But I think it's worth calling when it does, particularly the next day. Now, this caught my attention. This is from last week's news, and I know that a lot of you will have heard this, but it certainly caught my attention. Lansing, Michigan. A Michigan healthcare company has fired four of its employees for refusing to take a test to determine whether they smoke cigarettes. The company enacted a new policy this month, allowing workers to be fired if they smoke, even if that smoking takes place after hours or even at home. Now, this is going too far. I guess, in my opinion, I guess that legally, if you take on employment with an employer and you sign something that says, I will not smoke. As long as I work for employer X, I will not smoke. Will not smoke at home, will not smoke at work, will not take a puff of a cigar if a neighbor's baby's born. Nothing. If you put your John Hancock down there, then you deserve whatever you get, because you have made a bargain, and you must adhere to it. However, the entire concept of firing people for what they do at home, in the privacy of their own castle, their American castle, is absolutely abhorrent to me, and I'm sure many of you as well, absolutely abhorrent. And America has turned a dangerous corner and is sliding down a very slippery slope indeed. From the Independent UK, the headline is, Global Warming is Twice as Bad as Previously Thought. Global warming may be twice as catastrophic as previously thought, flooding settlements on the British coast and turning the interior into an unrecognizable tropical landscape, the world's biggest study of climate change now shows. Researchers from some of Britain's leading universities in computer modeling predict that under the worst-case scenario, London would be underwater and winters banished to history as the average temperatures in the United Kingdom soar to 20 degrees centigrade higher than at present. That's 20 degrees centigrade higher than at present. Can you imagine that? Globally, average temperatures could reach 11 degrees centigrade greater than today. That would be all over the world, folks. Double the rise predicted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The international body set up to investigate global warming. Such high temperatures would melt most of the polar ice caps and the mountain glaciers, raising sea levels by more than 20 feet. Can you imagine that? Sea levels up by more than 20 feet. Now, that's looking like a more serious story every moment, isn't it? 20 feet. Now, what would 20 feet of sea level do to, for example, New Orleans? A lot of islands. Here's a headline that I felt I should share with you. The headline is, and again, so you know the source, this comes from the BBC. It seems like I have to get this kind of news from the BBC. It doesn't run on American press. Now, why would that be? Headline, bird flu passed between humans. This is something to look out for. Scientists have said that a woman who died of bird flu probably contracted the disease from her daughter. The researchers at the Thai Ministry of Public Health warn it is likely there will be more cases where the virus is passed from human to human. Professor John Oxford, a leading UK expert, said the virus had broken down the final door, that's in quotes, the final door, which prevented it from being spread between people. The study is published in the New England Journal of Medicine. In 2004, avian flu infected at least 44 people in 8 South Asian countries, killing 32. Now, let's think about that. It infected 44 people, and 32 of them are dead. So the percentage of fatalities would be about, if you get this, 75%. 75% of those who get this are going to die. Until the late 1920s, it had not been thought that the virus strain H5N1 could spread to humans. Once it did, scientists began to fear it could then be spread between people. In a worst-case scenario, they suggested the virus could combine with a human flu virus if people were simultaneously infected with both. In other words, this avian thing gets together or infects somebody who's got regular flu. The viruses then combine, and the bird flu then is spread as easily as your average flu. Remember, a 75% mortality rate. Here's another headline for you. Arctic ozone may drop to new low. The coming weeks could bring the most severe thinning of the ozone layer over northern Europe since recording of all this even began. Again, this is the BBC Environment correspondent writing this. The stratosphere, where the ozone layer lies, has seen its coldest winter for 50 years. There have also been an unusually large number of clouds. These factors hasten the rate at which man-made chemicals destroy ozone. So, the conditions, weather-wise, we are now witnessing resemble and even surpass the conditions of the 1999-2000 season when the worst ozone loss to date was observed. Ozone is a molecule that is composed of three oxygen atoms. It is responsible for filtering out harmful ultraviolet radiation from the sun. And as you know, it is now serious enough, for example, in Australia, that the school children are required to wear headgear when they're on the way to school. And this also caught my attention. Mad cow disease found in goat. Great. Mad cow found in goat. A French goat has apparently indeed tested positive for mad cow disease, the first animal in the world other than a cow to have this bovine spongiform encephalitis, whatever. The European Commission says further testing is going to be done to see if the incident is an isolated one. The animal, which was slaughtered in 2002, was initially thought to have scrapie, a similar brain-wasting condition sometimes seen in goats, but British scientists now say the disease, in fact, has been confirmed to be BSE. More than 100 people in the UK have died from VCJD, the human form of BSE, after eating tainted beef. There are three French physicists who say they have now figured out how UFO engines work. This came from Whitley Strieber's website, Unknown Country. They claim they use a combination of electromagnetic and nuclear power, and they've built a model UFO engine at the French Astronomical Observatory in Marseille. Jean-Pierre Petit, Claude Bohrer, and Maurice Vinton call their engine, I'll never pronounce that. Say anyway, it'll produce over 1,000,000 watts of energy. One of its secrets is it can suppress shock waves, which occur naturally in the air and slow down any flying object. French science has a much more open attitude toward UFOs than do similar institutions here in the U.S. For instance, the head of the French UFO group, Gapon, while remaining in his position as head of the astronomy department of the French equivalent of NASA. This would not be possible in the U.S. So they think that they have created, well, a UFO engine. So there you have it. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Good morning.
He's going to the break first. Ain't nobody calling in. That's what he's doing.
What now? I'm talking to you. You're on the air. This is it. What are you talking about break? There's no break. The breaks about a minute away, so you got to talk fast.
Hey, Art.
Hey, yes.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
I'm sorry, sir. Look here, we're down here in Georgia, and
yes, down where the ice came.
Yes, and we weren't supposed to get this stuff. It was supposed to only go 50 miles north of us.
Mm.
And guess what? We woke up Saturday morning, and we got it.
Mm-hmm.
We got it good.
Yes. It fits right in with some of this weird weather not happening where it's supposed to happen story, right?
That's right. Hey, did you get any word from your electronics people yet from coming back from the trade show at Las Vegas?
A consumer electronics show?
Yes. Is Blu-ray coming out, a Blue Laser?
Oh, Blue Laser. It's not out yet, but I'm certainly looking forward to it. It's going to be revolutionizing everything we can do on DVD, including getting a high definition, finally, to DVD. From the high desert in the middle of the night where we do business, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Harry was a cop on the east side of Chicago, back in the USA, back in the bad old days. In the heat of a summer night, in the land of the dollar bill, when the town of Chicago died, talk about it still. When a man named Al Capone tried to make that town his own, and he called his gang to war with the forces of the law, I heard my mom cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died.
You get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime down off the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces. In all the places, but the horns, they blowing that sound way on down south, way on down south, London town.
All right, now you all listen very carefully. The numbers we use here on the weekend are a little different. Here they are.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Here nightly at your service. Good morning, everybody. We're going to go back to open lines for the next segment. Then, at the top of the hour, we host Patrick Heron. And I believe he's coming to us all the way from Dublin, Ireland. So that'll be interesting. And he's got a lot of interesting stuff to say about the Nephilim. Have you? And I've certainly been very curious about the Nephilim. So I think that it is his view that they built the pyramid. Boy, would he have a fight with Zahi Awas. Anyway, coming at the top of the hour, open lines, twits now and then. The line reserved for those who are calling for a first time ever, a noble effort indeed. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Okay, all right, this is Paul in Fremont.
Hello, Paul.
I work as a security guard out here in California, and I don't always get to hear all your show. And concerning your show last night on the weather phenomena.
Yes.
This afternoon after I got to work, I looked up, and lo and behold, I saw a cloud formation that was a dead ringer for a carpenter square.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a perfect right angle
Well, you've got to admit
it really stood out.
You've got to admit that with what he said last night, and then the story I just read you that broke today, gee, it seems like there is a connection, huh?
It's a little too freaky, yeah. And
by the way, you're a security guard. You said in every science fiction movie I have ever seen, sir. Security guards are sitting there usually at a desk, you know, with a pair of headphones over their ears so they can't hear a damn thing because they're listening to a show like this, and that's how they get eaten by monsters.
Well, I never walk into dark rooms, and I never wear headphones when I'm walking around.
So. Is that right? Okay.
Right. There's one other thing, too. I'm also an amateur radio operator.
Oh, you are?
Yes, sir, and I've noticed that, well, the other day I was listening on 10 meters, and there's, the band's been dead for months.
Mm-hmm.
But on 28.4, for about 3.5-4 minutes, there was a very distinct warbling sound.
Yes.
And it reminded me, when I was in the Marine Corps, of radio jamming.
Well, I don't know whether you listen on any of the lower frequencies, but I'm telling you, and I've been telling everybody else, something is woefully wrong with the ionosphere. By 7 o'clock at night, local time, in whatever time zone you reside in, 75 meters is just dead for a short skip. It's gone. It's like the ionosphere said, that's it.
No, yeah, I know. I've heard you talk about that before, and I've checked it out, and you're right. It's like somebody hits a switch.
I know. Just actually exactly like somebody just hit a switch. Maybe they did. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. There's something odd going on up there. I don't know. I really don't know what it's all about. Could be harp, or it could be harp-like, or it could be some other phenomena associated with degradation of some of the atmospheric layers that we have. But something is going on. I can't speak for all the layers. There are scientists who do that. I just read you a little bit about the ozone layer. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, the story about, I looked up the story on the bird flu virus, and it is indeed very fresh, the story about the increasing deaths from BBC.
Yes, and it would appear as though the mortality rate is nigh on to 75%. Now, should that ever get loose and be airborne as the regular flu is, well, you can imagine the horror.
It does have me a little concerned, Art.
Me too. And if that actually were to break out, I think I mentioned this to somebody a few weeks ago, and I think a lot of people would have to do this, there would be no help for it unless they've got an effective vaccine other than isolating yourself from the rest of the world for a period of time. Otherwise, that's it. 3 out of 4 of us would be toast.
They need to do the Andromeda strain setup.
Well, the Andromeda strain, of course, was from elsewhere. This one's homebrew.
I think it's our own. Well, the other thing, the thing that really started to get me worried was last fall when there was all of a sudden a shortage of flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't help but think that this was somehow the one punch of a 1-2 punch against the world's population.
Well, it could be, sir. What is I think bothered me is that for months now, we've been reading stories of scientists warning us that the bird flu is going to jump, or is likely to jump, and then is likely to be combined with the flu. That's pretty good stuff, worthy of, you know, Ed Dames or any other person who would have the ability to actually look into the future. In other words, how do scientists know this is going to happen? That's what's worried. It's like they're writing the stories as though they know it's going to happen. Although I guess it is the job of science to look at what is probable and what dangers we might face. I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hello.
Stan from Brooklyn.
I can hear the Brooklyn in you, yes.
Great. Listen, first, before I get to the topic, I just want to tell you how I got turned on to your show. This must have been about 7 years ago. Your old friend Curtis. He kept on talking about that Looney Kazooney from Parts Unknown.
Yes.
And I had to find out what it was. So,
good old Curtis,
I've been turned on ever since.
You know, I actually got an opportunity to get to New York and put my hands around Curtis's neck. I just didn't have the willpower to do what I should have done.
Anyway, listen, I imagine you got a large response about the your first guest last night when he was talking about the United States is going to get whacked because of its warmongering ways.
Yes.
Well, you know, I just like to ask why people like this never mention the tyrants that we seem to overthrow. How come they never say they're going to get whacked? Because of them. You know?
Isn't that a good point? I mean, the Saddam Husseins, the leaders of Cambodia, where the killing fields were. Yes, why not name some of those? Why is it always the U.S. and its policies?
Right. I mean, this guy murdered close to a million people.
Yeah, it's a very good point, sir. I take your point. There are those who just think we are the most evil thing that the world has ever seen, the U.S. We're not. There are many, many, many worse than we are. That is not to say we are not somewhat warlike people. We are. We are. The U.S. has generally been involved in one conflict or another, haven't we? So we are as warlike as any other, but we are not as bad as many, would be the way to put it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. This is Jamie from California.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, I brought your attention to a chemical that our U.S. government was testing. Called the love potion. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, actually, you know, when you called, I quickly went to the internet, found the article in question, I think it was on Drudge, and read it to the audience. This is the one where we were going to develop something to toss on the Iraqis, ostensibly, which would cause them to look at each other, that is, soldier to soldier, and be so enamored with the guy next to you that you'd forget about war and
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It was
well my well you know we soon forget that not too long ago we were inundated with these photos that were taken of Iraqi prisoners, you know, well obviously everybody kind of knows, and who's to say that this has not already been tested and that this was part of...
Well, most of those photographs that you saw, though, were things that were done at gunpoint, so I doubt it was a result of a drug. However, I didn't even know they had anything that would do that. I mean, what do they do? Are they dropping a little blue pill or something? Or what did they contemplate doing? What could possibly... That laughter came from the other room. What? Well, I guess I'll not pursue that. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. I was calling about the fan club here up in Nova Scotia.
What fan club?
Well, it's a small fan club we have here in the community. And we have some few things that we wanted to get to you because we realize, you know, you're a little bit concerned about what's going on with the Earth and stuff. Are you aware of the mini-dome?
Mini-dome, yes.
It's like a protective covering. I haven't heard an ad run until now on the radio, but it's a thing that we have. We make our own, and we also make suits. They protect you from any kind of frequency. They're spectrum suits. They protect you from any kind of energy. And we have one for you and Ramona, and even a mini kennel for your cats. Yeah, we were wondering. We've been trying to get a hold of you by email, but we haven't been able to. So we were wondering.
All right, here's how to get a hold. Now, rest. ArtBell@mindspring.com.
ArtBell, and what should you? What would you want in the subject so that you would pick it up?
Dome protection.
Dome protection. Okay.
Yes, all right.
We'll send you an email.
All right, buddy. Take care. I don't know. It brings a mental picture of four little mini domes for our furred friends. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Art.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Matt from Reno.
Yes, Matt.
The high desert up here. I was calling about the avian flu.
Yes.
And I do believe that it's a...
You're going to have to speak good and close to your phone. That's much
better.
Yes. Everybody who calls should know, if you take a phone and you put it down by your chin, that's the way it sounds. If your lips are touching it, that's how it sounds. So, there you go.
All right. Sorry. Excuse me there.
It's all right.
I just wanted to comment on the avian flu and a possibility that's a government plot and all that type of thing.
Well, any serious disease we get, there's always a group of people who think it was stewed up in some lab somewhere, and who's to know if they're wrong?
Well, I base my opinion on a book I read called The X-Virus by Mark Ryan, who's now a World Health Organization scientist.
Yes.
He wrote a book in 1992 called The X-Virus.
And he contends what?
Well, they have a virus in there that's mentioned. It's called ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome, which is sounds just like SARS. But if you read in the line between the lines in the scientific research that was done,
yes,
they tested AIDS. They took a recombination of AIDS, the like sped up version of the time frame that retrovirus takes to appear.
Yes.
And the doctor mentioned in the book, and this is all, verbatim in a book I read, and he said that he warned that this would emerge somewhere in the populations of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, just based on those little ideas.
Well, it seems like just about everything emerges someplace in Asia, doesn't it? And I've been told that one of the reasons for that is that the Asians work so closely with slaughter many animals and eat many animals that we don't. That may or may not be the case. Certainly the population density in Asia is far greater than ours. So there could be something to that. But most of these things do seem to emerge, don't they, from Asia. Wildcard Line, you're on the air, top of the morning.
Hi.
Turn your radio off, please. That's first.
Okay. This is Janice calling.
Janice, turn your radio off.
Yes.
That's good. All right, now proceed.
Art, when you had the HARP experiment on last Sunday night?
Yes.
And were you aware that on some of the radio stations we lost you?
No, I wasn't aware of that, but sometimes there are radio stations that have planned maintenance that occurs at night, and so they go off.
Well,
others perhaps say, oh, my God, he's going to talk about HARP.
Uh-huh.
And so they go.
And I call them. I called them.
What did they say?
And the phone rang, and then this young man answered, and I said, you have a problem? I said, Art Bell's not on the air.
Yeah.
And they said, and the young man, there was dead silence, and the man said, yes. And I said, well, can you tell me how long you're going to be off the air? And he said, probably at least an hour. And I said, oh, you were sabotaged because of HARP? And he said, probably. And I said, well, I guess I'll just go to bed then. So I went on to bed and went to sleep, and I missed your show on HARP.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but probably
you
slept better. Because if you had heard the show, you might have had trouble sleeping. Thank you very much. No, there are, it's not all a secret plan. It's not all conspiracy. Occasionally, stations do have planned maintenance, and so they will shut off, and you will hear nothing but static. Now, if you have a good radio, a radio that hears well in the nighttime and the conditions allow for it, you can tune around the dial, and inevitably, because we are so prolific in the nighttime, you will find us somewhere else. So don't just give up and go to bed unless you want a good night's rest and you don't want to hear a subject like HARP. In which case, like that young lady, perhaps you sleep well. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Hi, it's Diane from California.
Hi.
Hi. I have an idea about the weather situation that maybe because of crop circles being linked to electromagnetic energy, that either they're trying to tell us something by the crop circles that this is happening, or that the crop circles are telling us that they're doing it. And now I'm thinking that maybe the chemtrails is our government trying to protect us from something the aliens might be doing.
Well, you can just really let your imagination run wild, can't you?
Doesn't that sound kind of,
I don't know,
interesting?
Well, yes, it does. It sounds interesting. However, imaginative. In other words, we don't really have the facts. We don't really know what crop circles are. We don't really know what electromagnetic energy may be getting used by various entities and or / governments, whatever. We can pretty well imagine there is something going on, but imagining a connection between things that we don't know the basis of in the first place is, well, imaginative. International Line, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Turn the radio off, please. Yes, very good. Where are you?
Where am I?
Yes.
I'm in Utah.
Utah. Unfortunately, sir, you've called our international line reserved for those outside the country. First-time caller line, you're on the air, also needing to turn your radio off. Hello?
Hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello. I was disappointed yesterday. You had the Michael Horn
yes.
on the radio.
That's right.
And
turn your radio all the way off, please.
And he was talking to... he was talking about Bailey Myers.
Oh, yes.
Now, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. Every time you would talk about EFP or anything like that, I would call and research it. And in this case, I checked into Billy Myers about his ex-wife denouncing him, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and I find it to be a hoax. And then I was on the phone, and yet you didn't take any calls. Was that
when we have a guest who's only on for 1 hour, sir, which was the case with Michael Horn last night,
mm-hmm.
there's not time to take calls. We do that with, you know, our three-hour guests and then a couple of hours of discussion or whatever, hour and a half, and then we go to the phones. But when we have a very short guest on like that, we don't have time to take calls. That's all.
All right. I was really charged up because I really wanted to challenge Mr. Horn.
Well, then, in that case, you should have been pleased when I think, provided him with a very stiff challenge at the
Absolutely.
Bottom of the first hour there.
Yes, in reference to the underground video. Nevertheless, Mr. Bill, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Take care. By the way, that underground video, I got an email from somebody today who said, you know, that was Cal Korf. Beginning to end, it was Cal Korf. Now, I have no way of knowing if that is true. Cal Korf is a debunker, not really a skeptic. He might use the word skeptic, but really Cal Korf is a debunker. I mean, he is as fervently on the other side of things as those who suggest the incredible. I mean, he's just totally on the other side, and no matter what it is, if it is associated with anything paranormal, ufology, any of the rest of it, he is fervently opposed to it. And that would be the word debunker. That's Cal Korf, all right. Oh, Cal. Anyway, we're going to break here. When we come back, we're going all the way across this country and across the Atlantic to Ireland. Stay right where you are.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
This would be the worldwide part of it. Patrick Heron was born in Dublin, Dublin, Ireland, in 1952. He became interested in Bible prophecy concerning the end times around 1996. In 1997, his first book, Apocalypse Soon, which we're going to discuss tonight, by the way, was published and became a bestseller in Ireland, and then he followed it up with Apocalypse 2000, Patrick's latest book, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse, which Patrick believes is the first ever book proving overwhelmingly who built the pyramids and why. Patrick has a BSc and MA in Business Studies from Trinity College, Dublin, and a Bachelor of Theology degree from the College of Biblical Research, Rome, Italy, Indiana. Patrick is not associated with any particular church or denomination. Now, that's very interesting. Not associated with any particular church or denomination. Patrick Heron, in a moment. It's a very long way to Ireland, indeed. Here is Patrick Heron. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Art. It's lovely to talk to you.
And to talk to you as well. My goodness, isn't the modern world amazing? Over all these miles, and you sound so clear.
Yes, it's incredible. I almost can get a better line to you than I can get to my brother up the road a mile away.
Several years ago, Patrick, I had the honor of going to Egypt, and I got escorted through the pyramids and even some of the pretty secret places that are there by none other than Zahi Hawass himself. And we had a pretty significant discussion about who built the pyramids, and I can tell you without reservation that he believes the Egyptians built the pyramids. I know that you don't believe that's true, do you?
No, I don't, Art, and I'll tell you why. Scores, if not hundreds, of books have been written about the Great Pyramids of Egypt, and not just the Great Pyramids, but also other ancient monuments that populate the world, such as Stonehenge, Easter Island,
yes,
the pyramids in Mexico and Peru and Guatemala, Angkor Wat in Cambodia, etc., etc. And the conclusion that all these esteemed authors come to is that some lost civilization or advanced race of people built them, but nobody knows who they were. Well, I believe I've found the answer to this conundrum.
Okay.
And what I've done is I've taken a lot of the information that a lot of these other authors have provided. Like, for instance, Graham Hancock, he's written several books, and I think he sold about 5.5 million books, and his famous blockbuster was Fingerprints of the Gods.
I have interviewed him many times.
Yeah, well, I don't think Graham knows who built the pyramids. And what I've done is I've taken a lot of information that authors such as this have provided, and I provide the last few bits of the jigsaw puzzle to show who these people were, where they came from, where they got their astronomical and mathematical knowledge, where they got the incredible strength to construct these monuments, why they chose the pyramid shape, where they went, and also their role in our future because they're coming back.
All right. That's a lot to say, Patrick, but first let me come back and tell you that while I was there, Zahi Hawass, he thinks that I very much thought somebody else built the pyramids, and I have had those feelings as well. So he took me to the burial ground, Patrick, of the people who did build the pyramids. And there, translated, if you want to believe the translations, on the tombs of these people. There were specific inscriptions about the wives and the daughters and the men who worked on and built the pyramids, dedicated to their wife and the job they did building the pyramids and all the rest of it. Those graveyards are adjacent to Giza. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I've seen programs and I've seen burial grounds and such like. But let's just fill in your listeners on a few of the facts concerning the Great Pyramid of Giza art, and then we'll tease it out a little bit.
Alrighty.
I have a few statistics here. First of all, the Great Pyramid of Giza originally was finished in a very smooth white limestone finish, and some people believe that the top of it, the pyramidion, was some legends say it was finished in gold.
You refer to the capstone, yes.
That's right, the capstone.
Yes.
The Great Pyramid of Giza is an equilateral, each side is an equilateral triangle that faces exactly to the true north, south, east, and west,
mm-hmm.
and is accurate to within 0.001 of a degree.
Okay.
Each side, the length of the base of one of the sides of the pyramids in cubits is 365.2422 cubits, which is the exact length of a solar year, including the extra fraction for the leap year. The angle of the slope of the Great Pyramid is 10 to 9. That is, for every 10 feet you go up the side of the pyramid, you rise in altitude by 9 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the height of the Great Pyramid and multiply it by 10 to the power of 9, you get 91,840,000, which is the exact distance from the Earth to the Sun in miles. The Great Pyramid of Giza is situated at the exact dead center of the world, halfway between the northern tip of Norway and the southern cape, the Cape of Good Hope of South Africa, and halfway between the west coast of Mexico and the east coast of China.
Mm-hmm.
And it intersects the 30th parallel, both latitude and longitude. There are two shafts, what they call star shafts, on the north face and on the south face of the Great Pyramid, which pointed four distinct star signs, Draco, Ursa Minor, Sirius, and Orion.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough stone in the Great Pyramid to build a 6-foot wall from New York to Los Angeles. And if it were a skyscraper, it would be 42 stories high. So for over 5 millennia, the Great Pyramid was the tallest building in the world by, you know, a huge amount. Now, the solution to the mathematical problem of how to square the circle is incorporated within the geometry of the Great Pyramid of Giza. Yet what we are asked to believe, Art, and what historians and Egyptologists have told us, is that primitive man, you know, wandering in the desert, dressed in animal skin, somewhere between the Stone Age and the Bronze Age, built this incredible pyramid, which we couldn't build today, by the way. And somehow these same architects and builders hadn't yet figured out how to invent the wheel.
Well, I will give you this. Although Zahi Hawass and others believe the Egyptians built the pyramids, asked how they did it, he doesn't have the slightest idea.
That's correct.
He has no idea.
And when you see documentaries about them building the pyramids, you always see these bunches of slaves dragging huge stones and blocks along on wooden pallets, and
that's
somebody
right.
pouring water in the way, which is totally ridiculous. I mean, when you look at the incredible engineering feats, I mean, the Great Pyramid of Giza consists of around 2.3 million stone blocks weighing an average of 2.5 tons each. There are huge granite stocks within stones or blocks within the chambers inside the Great Pyramid that weigh up to 100 tons and are at heights of 60 yards up in the air.
Yes.
You know, so it's a little incongruous to believe. As I say, the solution to the mathematical problem of how to square the circle is incorporated within the geometry of the Great Pyramid. Now, if you gave me a compass and a pen, I don't think I'd be able to figure out this. And yet these same people haven't figured out yet how to invent the wheel. That's a bit like saying that if you give a screwdriver to a chimpanzee, he's going to be able to construct a television for you.
Yes. So you believe instead the pyramids were constructed by whom?
Well, they definitely weren't constructed by primitive man. Let me give you one other example of a place not far up the road from the Great Pyramid of Giza called the Temple of Jupiter at Lebanon. It's in Baalbek in Lebanon. And the Temple of Jupiter looks like a typical Greek temple with all the various columns, except when you get in and look at the foundation blocks, it's got three huge cut hewn stone foundation blocks that weigh 800 tons each. That's two and a half. That's the weight of two and a half jumbo jets together.
Yes.
747s together.
Patrick, I do have a question, actually, that falls in between, and that is, what similarities do we see, Patrick, between the Great Pyramid and pyramids that we find elsewhere in the world? Because bear in mind, folks, this was at a time when there was not worldwide communication, really, of any sort. So pyramids all around the world. What are the similarities between them?
Well, a lot of, if you look at the pyramids in Mexico, for instance, they look very similar to the pyramids in Egypt. So are we to believe that the primitive Egyptians, after they finished doing the job over in Egypt, that they hopped into a boat, you know, a couple of thousands of them, and sailed all the way over to Mexico and then constructed these fantastic pyramids down there?
It is quite a mystery indeed, as you look around the world and find pyramid after pyramid after pyramid. So I was curious, are they similar in any details that are significant?
Well, they're similar in the shape for a start, and then apparently there's a lot of astronomical significance as well. Graham Hancock and Robert Bavall and other such writers have pointed out that they have all these pyramids, and not just the pyramids, but temples as well, in Angkor Wat and other places, have alignments with celestial alignments, star mm-hmm. constellations, Draco, Leo, Virgo, etc., etc. But let me just jump ahead for a moment, if I might, Art.
You might, but one other question, if I might, and that is, what do you believe that the purpose of the pyramids was or is?
Well, now, that is the conundrum, the enigma, and the riddle we're trying to figure out.
All right.
I'll just jump forward for a second, if
sure.
I may.
Sure.
The first half of my book is a thesis on the Nephilim. And in the second half of my book, I go into the Apocalypse, the Book of Revelation, and I provide a summary of the prophecies of the Book of Revelation and of the signs we are told would precede the apocalypse.
And we are going to talk of that this night, by the way. The second half of the program this night will be kind of concentrating on that.
That's right. And at the very end of the Book of Revelation, in the second last chapter, it talks about the new heaven and the new earth, and it describes this city descending on the new heaven, or on the new earth, out of heaven. And this city is called the New Jerusalem, and it describes it in great detail. And at the end of the description of this city, it gives us the dimensions of it. It says its length and its breadth and its height is the same. In other words, it's a pyramid in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this future pyramid city that is described in detail at the end of the apocalypse that gives the answer to the riddle as to why the pyramids were built in Egypt and Mexico and elsewhere in the first place. But we'll get to that later on, Art.
All right.
Okay, so just to finish off on that temple of Jupiter in Lebanon, by the way, lying out on the ground not very far away from the Temple of Jupiter in Baalbek in Lebanon is another huge stone square block, which is 1,000 tons weight. That's three jumbo jets together. We don't possess a machine in the world today that can move that. Yet we're asked to believe that primitive man with a little hammer and a chisel, you know, hewed this thing out and then threw a rope about around it and dragged it somehow. And yet we would find it very difficult to duplicate such a building today. So there's something else going on. That's the point.
Yeah, and it's one that those in Egypt can't answer. I went down the same path, really I did, with Zayawas, and he simply could not answer. He said, what you see is impossible. I have no idea how it was done. But he says, I can assure you it was done by Egyptians. But since he cannot explain how, I think that all bets are kind of off, Patrick, until he can.
Absolutely. I mean, the Egyptians tell us that it was built by a pharaoh called Khufu, known to the Greeks as Cheops. Now, Khufu reigned for 23 years, and with at least 2 million blocks incorporated in the building of the Great Pyramid of Giza, mm-hmm. in order to finish the job in his 23-year reign, they would have to move a block into place every 5 minutes to complete the job in his 23 years. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know about over there in the California, Art, but when the local county council or the corporation go out and dig a hole in the road outside my house and then do some work and finish it and fill it in again, it usually takes them like weeks, if not months.
Yes.
So a little incongruous to believe that these guys, these primitive men, were able to build the Great Pyramid without the use of a wheel or pulleys or machines of any description.
Yes, it's a puzzle. So who then do you believe did build them?
Well, I believe it was built by the Nephilim. Now, the Nephilim, there's a lot of information about these guys buried in the Old Testament. and in the New Testament, there's information about them as well. And nobody ever dug it up and put it together before. And the word Nephilim is a Hebrew word. It comes from the Nephal, meaning to fall. So these are what you and I would call fallen angels, because they fell to earth, fell from grace, and fell from heaven. Now, I don't like the word angel art, because as soon as you mention the word angel, people get a mind picture of a little cherubim with no genitalia and a bow and arrow going around trying to shoot you in the heart.
Yeah.
Or else they think of some guy with 20-foot wings and a big spotlight behind them and probably angelic music in the background.
That's right.
But when you go and study the appearance of these guys throughout the scriptures, by the way, the Hebrew word for angel is malak, and the Greek word is agalos, and a better translation would be messenger or agent. And when you study the appearance of these guys, and that word appears over 300 times in scripture, they always appear as men. They look like men. They're dressed like men. They've been mistaken as men. They have eyes, ears, nose. They eat, they drink. Excuse me. And apparently they can have sex with women. And we're told in Genesis 6:4 that these men, now the difference is that they're spirit men. You and I are flesh and blood. These guys are spirit. Whatever that is, we don't know what spirit is, but it transcends the boundaries of physical science. And these guys fell to earth in the dim, distant past some 5,500 years ago.
They were cast out, were they not?
They were cast out, but some of, well, there was a lot of them cast out, but these guys particularly seem to have become manifested in the realm of the physical. And I think it says in a couple of places that they left their first estate, which appears to indicate that they couldn't go back there when they became manifested in the realm of the senses, as it were. And it says they had sex with ordinary women and produced this very evil, violent offbreed that were great in size and height. And this is where you got all your Greek and Roman and Egyptian mythology from. The gods came down from heaven. They lived in Mount Olympus in Delphi. Zeus came down. He took Alcmene to wife, a mortal woman, and she almost died giving birth to Hercules. That's where all this stuff comes from. Now, you know, you might say, or a lot of people would say, well, that's just mythology. It's like legend. But
yes, it is for many people, Patrick, more difficult to believe than the Egyptians somehow coming upon some way to build the pyramids that we have not yet discovered. I mean, it's more outrageous in some ways, and I wonder how you come to believe it.
Well, I mean, any historian will tell you, Art, that mythology has its genesis and its basis in truth and in fact.
Probably.
It's just that the stories have been distorted somewhere as they've come down through the centuries. And the point is that there's hundreds, if not thousands, of these buildings all over the world from primordial times that there's just no accounting for. Even here in Ireland, we've got a place called Newgrange, which is a big round stone mound with a passage into it. And once a day on the 21st of December, the winter solstice, the sun shines in and illuminates the inner chamber. And this is an incredible building. Just one day in the year. So the builders of that obviously knew of celestial things and dates.
And where is that in Ireland?
It's just about 30 miles from Dublin. It's just three quarters of an hour away from where I live here. And not just Newgrange, there's hundreds of other dolmens, souterrains, cairns, huge stones on top of one another, other stone configurations all over this country. And invariably in them they'll find ashes and bones of humans, because invariably these guys were involved in sacrifices, blood sacrifices, the druids and stuff like that. And we'll come to that in due course, because that's all part of the of what's going on with these Nephilim, the fallen angels.
Well then, what have we got in Egypt when you walk among the burial ground? Is it those who were pressed into service in conjunction with Nephilim, or was
it's very possible, but you have to understand that the great pyramids have been there since 3,500 BC,
right?
And so that's 5,500 years ago. I mean, there's a lot of people living around that area, so I guess they have to get buried somewhere.
Yes, but there were specific inscriptions regarding, foremen and people who had different described jobs in building the pyramids. Hold tight here. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast.
My old friend came by the day, 'cause he was telling everyone any time of the love that he just found and the reason they latest friend. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, whitest hair.
anywhere, and the reason ain't of his latest fame. Though I smiled with tears inside of the burning, I wished him luck again, then he said goodbye. He was gone, but still his words kept returning.
Code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
From Dublin, Ireland, Patrick Heron is my guest. And he's talking, we're now talking about who built the pyramids in Egypt. I've got a thought or two on that coming up, as does Patrick. Stay right there. I don't know about the rest of you, but I am kind of a hands-on guy. I tend to believe what is in front of my eyes, what I can see and touch and understand. Now, with regard to Giza and the pyramid, I was there. Pyramids, I guess. I was there. And I got to go places where most people don't get to go. At the time I was there, they had just made the discovery of this gigantic field adjacent. You know, it was a pretty good ride, I guess, actually, in a four-wheel vehicle, adjacent to Giza, uncovered with just hundreds, no, thousands of graves and tombs that were inscribed many times to the families or in honor of the families or the person who died, and many times a translated Egyptian clearly indicated what job they had with respect to the construction of the pyramids. Now, nobody knows, including Zayuas and the very best Egyptian scholars, how it was done. Not a soul knows. So what's easier to believe? That the Egyptians did it with help from elsewhere? That would be easier to believe, since I do know there were some Egyptians absolutely involved in the construction of the pyramids. But then again, Patrick, I don't rule out the possibility that knowledge was used in that construction that was not of Earth at that time, nor now, for that matter. So, you know, have you been to Giza?
I haven't been to Giza, but I've been to Egypt. I spent a week, went down the Nile, visited a lot of the temples, which are also absolutely incredible, by the way.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
Absolutely amazing. And the technology and whatever tools they use to build these things are... it's just mind-blowing and mind-boggling, and there's something else going on there. Now, there are 70 or 80 pyramids in Egypt, I believe, and a lot of them are really shabby.
Yes.
None of them compare with the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Quite true. Yes, quite true.
And so perhaps, you know, there was other attempts in later years by humans to build these things, because that's what it certainly looks like. But not just the Great Pyramid, but the Sumerian civilization that emerged with mathematics, with writing, with zodiacs and calendars predicting the future. We had the Assyrians doing the same thing. It just seems, it's a bit like, I suppose to use a metaphor, it's a bit like, suppose somebody invented a wheel, and then 200 years later, somebody else invented a stagecoach. Well, in between the wheel and the stagecoach, we have a brand new Mercedes-Benz. That's what the Great Pyramid of Giza is like. Now, perhaps some of the Egyptians were pressed into service there. I don't know, but there's 60 million people living in Egypt today, 20 million of them in Cairo, and I guess they have to be buried somewhere. And a lot of these other pyramids, perhaps they were involved in that.
Well, I don't know. I think you need to go there and see them and see the translations for yourself. I just think that you need to allow for the possibility that Egyptians were involved in the construction of the pyramids. That doesn't mean all of the technology was theirs.
Well, let's park it for the time being and come back to it later on, Art.
All righty.
And move on in the discussion of the Nephilim. Because according to my calculations, these Nephilim, these fallen angels, were knocking around for the best part of 1,000 years. And they so infected the human race with their evil and their violence at that time that Yahweh, which is the Hebrew word for God, wiped the whole lot out in the flood of Noah, which is also recorded in the Epic of Gilgamesh and the Sumerian flood tragedy.
Yes.
And everybody was drowned except for Noah and his family. Now, you can't drown spirit men. So we're told that these spirit men, these fallen angels, these Nephilim, are locked up in a subterranean jail. And it's called many things in the scriptures. It's called gloomy dungeons. It's called a prison. It's called the abyss. It's called the pit of the abyss. And once in the New Testament, it's called Tartarus or Tartarus. Now, this is very, very interesting that it's called, referred to as Tartarus. Because this, in Greek and Roman and Egyptian mythology, it talks about Tartarus being the subterranean prison of the Titans and the gods that rebelled against Zeus.
I know a lot of people I'd like sent there right now.
In the Egyptian Book of the Dead and the Pyramid Texts and the Edfu Texts, it speaks about the underworld or the abode of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Hades is the keeper of the abode of the dead, and you've got to cross the river Styx to get to it. And Osiris is the judge or keeper of the ruler of the abode of the dead. And then, as I say, once in the New Testament, in Peter, we're told that the Messiah, in his risen body, went and preached to these spirits, these men, these fallen spirit men, in this place called Tartarus or Tartarus. And the word for preached in the Greek is caruso, which means he heralded his triumph before them. The word would be used, the same word would be used of a Roman general who came back to Rome from some far-flung campaign, and he brought all his slaves and his treasures and his trophies from his conquering journey, and he would herald his triumph before the citizens of Rome. This is the same word that's used when it says the Messiah went to these guys in this subterranean prison, somewhere on this earth, I believe, and heralded his triumph before these guys. I suppose you could say he probably said, okay, guys, I'm up from the dead. All your plans came to naught. You know, your goose is cooked, and I'll be back, or words to that effect. And this is, as I say, this subterranean prison fits in like a hand in a glove with the Greek and Roman and Egyptian mythology. Furthermore, we'll discuss this later, in the book of Revelation, in chapter 9 in the Apocalypse, it says that this pit of the abyss is going to be opened once more. And these infernal band of Nephilim are going to be released in the future to cause destruction to the people of the earth. And we are told that they have a king over them, the king of the abyss. And it says his name in the Greek is Abaddon.
Patrick, it would seem that we don't need them to be destroyed. We're looking like we're doing a pretty good job of it all by ourselves. We don't need an army of additional trouble, do we?
What we're seeing now is what I call the shadows of the apocalypse. Wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases, etc. We'll get into that in the next hour. That's what I call the shadows of the apocalypse. But in this future time, this future seven-year period, I believe it is, that's when the muck hits the fan big time. And we're told that this pit of the abyss is going to be opened and these guys are going to be released. And this guy, this angel, as I say, his name in the Greek, in Hebrew is Abaddon, and the Greek is Apollyon, A-P-O-L-L-Y-O-N. Now, Apollyon is none other than how the Greeks spell what we would call Apollo. And Apollo in French, incidentally, is A-P-O-L-L-O-N. And he is one of the main leaders of the pantheon of Greek gods from Greek mythology. Okay? But we're jumping the gun a bit there. These guys, there was two eruptions, by the way, of these fallen spirit men. One was before the flood, and then the whole lot was washed out in the deluge of Noah, and these spirit men are locked up. But then we are told, it says, in fact, let me just read the verse. And it came to pass when men began to multiply in the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. There were giants, there were Nephilim, is the word, in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them. The same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And in another translation it says, these were the heroes of old. Well, who are the heroes of old, of Greek mythology and Egyptian mythology? Well, they're none other than people like Apollo, Mars, Saturn, Hercules, Zeus, Athena, Aphrodite, and people such as this. And when you go and read the stories of these guys, I mean, they were into sex, drugs, rock and roll big time, you know, they were...
Where are they?
Animalism, warfare, murdering one another... Patricide, matricide, fratricide, you name it, they did it. And this fits in with the accounts in Genesis where it says, because of the violence and the whole world was filled with bloodshed at that time, that that's why Yahweh wiped the whole lot out in this deluge.
Hmm. Don't you think we're getting rather close to the same sort of behavior, though somewhat more isolated?
Well, absolutely. But again, yeah, we're to jump on the gun a bit, Art. You know, when they asked the Messiah what would be the signs of the end of this age and of his coming, he said wars, rumors of wars, famines and earthquakes, diseases. And he also said it was going to be similar to the days of Noah and the days of Sodom.
What were those things you just rattled off? War?
Yeah.
And keep going.
Wars, rumors of wars.
Rumors of wars, lots of those.
Famines. And earthquakes. He said, nation shall rise against nation, a kingdom against kingdom. And the Greek word for kingdom there is ethnos.
War.
Ethnos.
All right, so we've got all that.
Oh, yeah, well... That's what I say. Now, you could say that. A lot of people would say, oh, well, we've always had wars and famines and earthquakes and diseases. It also says, by the way, the wind and the sea raging.
Mm-hmm.
But the main sign has to do with the fact that the Jews are back in Israel, Art.
Mm-hmm.
Scores of prophecies said that the children of Israel would be kicked out of Palestine and Egypt, and Israel, that they would be scattered to the four corners of the world. And that everywhere they'd go, they would be despised and persecuted and hated of all nations. And in 70 AD, a Roman general called Titus went into Jerusalem to put down an insurrection. He slaughtered about 1 million Jews. The rest were scattered to the four corners of the world, hence the wandering Jew. Everywhere they've gone, they've been hated and persecuted, which culminated in the Holocaust in Germany in the last World War. But there are dozens of other prophecies that said in the last days and the last generations that Yahweh would gather his people together and establish them in Palestine and Israel again, and he would do this as a sign to the rest of the world that we were in the last throw of the dice, as it were. And in 1948, Israel was recognized as a state for the first time in their 2,000-year worldwide scattering. So when people go home and switch on the television and look at the news and see trouble in Palestine between the Jews and the Palestinians and other Arab countries, we are watching that prophecy coming to pass. We are that generation. They're there since 48. That's what, 56 years ago.
Yes.
And what happens in that neck of the woods is what world peace is contingent upon. And in fact, in the future, at the end of the book of Revelation, which, as I say, we'll get into later on, that's where the muck is going to hit the fan at the very end of the 7 years in a place called the Valley of Megiddo in northern Israel.
Mm-hmm. The Nephilim, are they still in existence now?
Well, that's a good question. There was two eruptions of these Nephilim, one before the flood and then again after the flood. And you might remember at the time, after Moses led the children of Israel out of captivity in Egypt, and they were there for 400 years, I think, and then they wandered in the desert for 40 years, and he sent in 12 spies into the land of Canaan, because this was promised to Abraham that they were to go in to possess this land. And they sent in 12 spies, and the 12 spies came back. And 10 out of the 12 spies said, there's no way we could take this place. It says, we saw the Nephilim there, the sons of Anak, who come of the Nephilim. And it says, we look like grasshoppers compared to these guys because they're huge. And it says they carried a clump of grapes with them to bring them back to show them how rich the land was because it was flowing with milk and honey. And this one cluster of grapes was so big that two guys had to carry it on the staff between them, which might suggest genetic engineering. But later on, Joshua did lead Israel in there. They defeated all these giants in Canaan at that time. And it says they killed Og, the king of Bashan, and they took 60 of the giant cities of Bashan, it says, and killed all the giants. And there's a lot of information about this. Some of them escaped to Gath and Ashdod, but they took 60 of the giant cities and killed Og, and were given the measurements of Og's bed in cubits, and it translates in feet into about 18 and a half feet long and about 8 feet wide.
Excuse me, how long?
18 and a half feet long.
18 and a half
18 feet. And a half feet long and about 8 feet wide.
I wonder if some of these Nephilim later joined the Raiders football team.
You could probably do with some of them, could you?
the original question was, are they still alive? Alive might be the wrong word. Are they still with us now?
Well, yeah, I was coming to that.
Okay.
We're told specifically that the original Nephilim, the pre-flood Nephilim, are locked up. But we're not told that the guys that came after the flood are locked up. And I, in fact, surmise in my book that they are still at large, or that this would account for a lot of the UFO activity and other stuff you've going on today. Because it would seem that if we're to believe writers such as Graham Hancock and Robert Duvall and others, that a lot of the pyramids and the ancient monuments that we have in places like Mexico and Guatemala and Peru and Cambodia and other places are much newer. They reckon Angkor Wat was occupied up till 400 years ago.
Patrick, hold on a second.
Yeah.
I have a lot of people who call this program who see moving, large, shadow-like creatures out of the corner of their eye. They see them very quickly. Some people have begun to see them straight on, but for the most times, they're in the very corner of your vision, and you can see them sort of flitting and moving as a shadow might move very, very quickly. And if they still are present, I wonder if that is the form they might appear to be in.
Well, you know, when Lucifer got kicked out of heaven, he brought a third of the spirit men with him. So there's, I don't know, thousands if not millions of these knocking around.
Well, I mean, we don't see them readily. We don't see 18 and one half foot men, or, you know, they'd be on the basketball teams. So
no, but they manifest themselves, Art, in all sorts of particular ways, you know, in ectoplasms and things moving around houses.
Well, there you have it. So, in other words, you might believe then that most ghost sightings, most paranormal activity is actually a manifestation of the Nephilim. Would that be correct?
Well, the Nephilim are a little different insofar as the Nephilim, I believe, actually come into manifestation in the realm of the senses and can't go back to the spirit form they were in. Are you with me?
Well, yes.
So I think that the Nephilim that came to the earth and propagated with women and filled up the land of Canaan,
yes,
after the flood are still at large. And I believe that's why their footprints and their fingerprints start off in the Middle East and then lead to places like Peru, up in the Andes, Guatemala, Mexico, then on to Cambodia and places like that.
All right, Patrick, then who do you think, what do you think is manifesting as what we call ghosts and that sort of thing that so many people have experiences with, Patrick, sometimes knowing things that, for example, only a relative would know, or having knowledge that only, you know, a dead relative would have. What are these things?
These are evil spirits, Art. I mean, in the Old Testament, what you're talking about are called familiar spirits. And the reason they're called familiar spirits is they've been knocking around since the dawn of time, and they're familiar with everything you've done and the time you went down the wrong lane with the wrong girl in the wrong car and did the wrong thing, Art.
Oh, my goodness.
Or else they are familiar with something. They might come back and possess a medium or a psychic and speak to you in a voice that you could only recognize as maybe your grandmother and tell you something that only you and her know in order to deceive you.
But you're saying it's not really my grandmother.
Pardon?
It's not really my grandmother.
No, not at all. Your grandmother is dead, God bless her, I presume. It's these evil spirits, and they're actually called in the Old Testament familiar spirits because they're familiar with what went on. But one thought before I forget this. You're familiar with the incredible building out in Cambodia called Angkor Wat.
I am.
Angkor Wat.
I am, indeed.
That's right. And that comes from the word Ankh and Hor, H-O-R. And Graham Hancock, in one of his books, says the word Ankh in the Egyptian means living. It's that sort of a cross with the round thing that you see the gods holding
yes.
in the funerary rites. Living. And the word Hor is Horus. So he thinks Angkor means Horus lives. Well, perhaps Horus does live. And perhaps he's one of the post-flood Nephilim that are still at our large and are maybe hiding out in some dark, mystical forest high in the deepest Cambodia, out of the sight and reach of the onslaught of men.
Is there any appearance associated with them?
Well, I have some stories about appearances of these guys. For instance, I spoke a couple of years ago with a young man who works in a publishing house in Belfast, a Christian man. He's married to a Christian girl from Indonesia or somewhere out there near where the tsunami was.
I'll tell you what, Patrick, we're at the top of the hour here where we have to take a break. So we'll get right back to their appearance. I'm particularly interested in that because we have these reports of things seen in forests around the U.S. from the southeast, the area of Florida and the southeast, the marshes, those kinds of areas to the American Northwest. And we do have descriptions of these creatures. And they're big. And they're hairy. And I wonder if there's any connection. Patrick Heron from Dublin, Ireland. We'll be right back.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Ah, yes, the Internet. That brings to mind something and a bit of a challenge for Patrick Heron. He's my guest from Dublin, Ireland. We're talking about all kinds of mythology, you know, the ones who fell or were expelled from heaven, the mythologies of Greece, Rome, Egypt, that sort of thing. I have a very hard time believing it. I believe things I can put my hand on and We can't put our hand on this. We really can't. You can put your hand, though, on the tombs of those who built the pyramids. So I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying I have a very, very hard time believing it. But then again, that's me. A gem of a little bit of a truth at the basis of all this. Perhaps so. But you have the internet, no doubt, right? How much current, contemporary mythology do we have in the world that's just a bunch of absolute bunk, but is nevertheless believed by many and circulated daily on the internet? There's a ton of it out there. In other words, we can't even keep our own myths straight in the today time. We just can't do it. So why are we to believe a myth that is thousands and thousands of years old? I mean, I guess put another way, Patrick, why? How do you believe in all this?
Well, Art, let's look at some of the places that exist around the world. For instance, I live in just outside Dublin here. For any people that have been to Dublin, there's a big, wide main street down in it. It's called O'Connell Street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's named after a guy called Daniel O'Connell, who was a famous politician about 150 years ago.
Hmm.
Did a lot for Ireland. A few miles up the road from me, there's a little town called Bally James Duff. From Bally is from the Irish Balia, which means town.
Yeah.
Balia James Duff, the town of James Duff.
Okay.
The town I live in here is called Swords. The Irish version is Sword Cullum Kill, which means the well of Cullum Kill. And Cullum Kill was a famous saint in Ireland around 500, 600 AD, brought Christianity to Scotland and other parts of Europe.
Your point being?
My point being that you go back to places like Athens. Athens is named after Athena, who is one of the female Nephilim. Rome is named after Romulus and Remus, one of the twins of the sons of another fallen angel. Heraklion is the city you fly into when you go to Crete in Greece. Heraklion means the place of Hercules. Europe was a god from Europa. Asia was a god.
I'm not denying the memory of and the continuation of these myths and that places are named for, very well-known mythological characters, but that doesn't, still, it's not sufficient reason to believe that it's all real, is it?
I'm saying it the other way around. I'm saying the reason that these names are on the places was because that's where these people came from.
Well, I understand that. And,
for instance, there's a place in Macedonia called, or 35 miles from Thessaloniki, called Apollonia, which means the place of Apollo.
Yes.
There's a place about 6 miles from the Gulf of Corinth called Delphi. Now, Delphi was the most famous oracle of Apollo. His temple, his theater, and his treasures were there.
Mm-hmm.
And Delphinus, incidentally, is a constellation in the star sign Capricorn in the northern planisphere. And Delphi is obviously named after Delphinus.
But all of this does not prove that these characters were as real as the myths make them.
But the point is when you go to these places, Art, and you look at these temples, for instance, the temple I spoke about in Lebanon,
yes,
with 800-ton stone blocks, which are 1,000-ton stone blocks lying on the ground, which we don't have a machine to move today, there's something going on.
Well, now, here I agree with you, Patrick. Here I agree. These things are inexplicable. Even modern science cannot explain them. The Japanese tried to duplicate the pyramids. Total, abysmal failure.
Absolutely.
So you and I agree on this, but I don't understand how even that suggests that all of these mythologies that you've discussed are based in reality.
Well, when you get and you start putting all the jigsaws together, I mean, we're just covering a small smidgen here. There's another place, you've heard of Pan, for instance.
Yes.
Remember, Pan was the demigod. He had the legs of a goat and horns and then the upper body of a man.
See, that's hard to believe right there.
Right, it is. Well, hold on for a minute. There's a town in northern Israel called Caesarea. But before it was called Caesarea, it was called Banias. And prior to being called Banias, it was called Panias, meaning the place of Pan. And there's niches in the rocks there where Pan apparently hung out. And then mythology would tell us that Pan, he'd like to chase the nymphs, which we get the word nymphomaniac from, hang out with satyrs who were very well endowed other demigods.
I thought that nymphs chased you. They didn't require being chased.
Well, apparently, well, maybe they did chase Pan, but apparently he would get involved in a big orgy, sex, drugs, rock and roll,
yes.
And halfway through the orgy, he might lose his head. He was very bad temper, very sharp fuse, go nuts, and then start to kill a few people. And this is where we get the word panic from, pandemonium.
It would certainly put a dent in any good orgy. No question about it. I said it would put a dent in any good orgy, no question about that.
Absolutely, and we have a place called Panias, and you can go and look at his niches, it's there. And incidentally, that's only 10 miles from a place called Mount Hermon, which we were told in the Book of Enoch is where the original Nephilim, the original fallen angels descended in the days of Jared in 3,500 BC. So the point I'm making is that I say that all the, and there's hundreds of these all over the Mediterranean area, where there are places named after gods, not just because of some mythology, because if there was a regular king there, or a regular politician, he'd name the places after himself. So what I'm saying is that these places are named, and all these buildings and monuments are there, because that's where these people lived. Mm-hmm. Just because we don't see them, doesn't mean they're not there. I mean, spirits are like that.
Well, it doesn't mean they were there either. It means that places were named for them. Now, that could be, I mean, basically all of this does come back, Patrick, to the Bible, doesn't it? And faith, the word faith. You must have faith in what is written there.
I know, but I mean, you're not born with faith, Art. I was raised as a Catholic. I didn't know anything about the Bible. And, you know, when I was about 14, I rejected all that. I thought it was a lot of bunk. And then I was into sex, drugs, rock and rolls for many years myself. And at age 24, I started reading the Bible for about a year, and one night I had a Saul on the road to Damascus epiphany, which changed my whole outlook on the whole thing. And that's brought me to where I am today. But, I mean, it's a bit like, you know, if I dragged you in off the street and I said, well, you know, Art, I want you to be on the jury now. This guy over here, he's up for murder. Is he guilty or innocent? Well, you'd say, well, I haven't heard the evidence. And the point with most people is we've never had enough evidence given to us whereby we could come to an informed conclusion about these things.
Well, I'm open to that, to evidence, and you just said it yourself. We just don't have enough evidence to conclusively have a hands-on way to believe in these mythologies.
Well, then, let's take it a step further, then, and get into how the Bible works, how prophecy works.
Okay.
Because the Bible is a prophetic book. About 25 to 30% of it is prophetic. It's telling you things that are going to happen before they do. So either the veracity is borne out by the fulfillment of the prophecy, or else its non-fulfillment proves that it's false, and you can throw it into the bin. It's no good to anyone.
By the way, Patrick, since you said it's mostly prophecy, I wonder if you have any comment on the Bible code. And, of course, the Bible code proclaims that it has found a mathematical way to discern a hidden message, a mathematical message, within the words of the Bible that also portend future events. You've heard about this?
Yes, not only have I heard about it, but I quote him. I quote the Bible code just briefly at the beginning of my book to show what an amazing literary tome we have here and how undiscovered it is.
Now, I interviewed just a couple of weeks ago Michael Drosnin.
Yes.
Who wrote the Bible code.
Yeah.
And it is his view, I guess, that, and he's just a journalist, you know, he's very detached from faith, detached from faith, and he believes it to be absolutely accurate, based on his journalistic investigation. He thinks it's the real McCoy.
Well, absolutely, but my book doesn't even have to go into running the Pentateuch through computer programs to find out whether it's true or not. For instance, when the Messiah was on this earth, he fulfilled at least 109 specific prophecies about himself. In the last 24 hours of his life, 25 specific prophecies came to pass, which were all written from 500 to 1000 BC. For instance, it was prophesied he'd be betrayed by his friend, he'd be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver, his friend would commit suicide, they'd use the money to buy the potter's
field. He would crucify with thieves and robbers. They would gamble over a seamless robe. They'd stick a spear in his side and blood and water would come out. 25 specific things in one 24-hour period. And there's one writer called Grant Jeffrey, an American author, who wrote a book a few years ago. And he took just 11 prophecies, Art, and he apportioned probability to them. For instance, he said now in Micah 5:2, it said that the Messiah would be born of a virgin in a place called Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem was a little Mickey Mouse village in the backwater of the Roman Empire in Palestine that had no significance at all. And he said kings or messiahs usually get born in, you know, the head city. So he said, we'll make that, say, 200 to 1, even though there was thousands of villages he could be born in. Conservative estimate, 200 to 1. Then he took another one there. In Zechariah 9, it says that the Messiah would ride into Jerusalem on an ass. Now, kings don't go around riding on asses. They usually ride big black steeds or white steeds. So he said, we'll make that, you know, 20 to 1. So the combined probability of the two of these coming to pass was 10,000 to 1. Or, sorry, 50 to 1 he made that. And he took 11 of these prophecies. And when he multiplied out the probability of these just 11 prophecies coming to pass in this one man's life, it came out at something like one chance in 10 billion times a billion. In other words, he put it this way, Art. Suppose I took a ring from your finger and I went up in an airplane and I flew around the seven oceans over the world and somewhere I opened the window and I threw the ring out. Then I came back and I gave you a boat and a fishing rod and I said, Art, off you go there. You can sail around the seven oceans of the world. And you, when you're feeling lucky, you have one chance to let your hook down and locate your ring.
About that mathematical chance.
That's about the mathematical chance of just 11 of these prophecies coming to pass in the Messiah's life. He fulfilled 109, possibly more. There's 737 prophecies so far discovered biblically, about that many, and over 80% have been fulfilled with 100% accuracy to date. And the rest are just left to the future, to what's going on now. As I said to you earlier, when they asked the Messiah what would be the signs of the end of this world and of his coming, the first thing he said to watch out was false prophets, false Christs, false messiahs. Then he said, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. Ethnos, false ethnos, one ethnic group against another ethnic group. We have that here in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, with the Catholics and the Protestants.
Well, of course you do, and it's all over the world. When has this not been going on in recorded human history? I mean, couldn't every generation, Patrick, look at the wars, rumors of wars, and all the rest of it, click, 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 and say, these are the final days. We are in the final days. Mankind could always read those passages and conclude that it was that time now. Couldn't he?
Well, I could argue the toss with you on that one, Art, because if you just take in the last 90 years, with the First World War, 40 million killed, unprecedented in history before that. The Second World, they call that the Great War. Then we came along 25 years later or something, and we doubled it, 60 or 70 million.
Mm-hmm.
The disease of the earthquakes. But the point is people can say that. Were the Jews ever back in Israel before?
Well, no, that's one.
That is the main one that people such as Hal Lindsey and Dwight Pentecost and Dave Hunt, these great eschatological authors and teachers, that's the main point.
That does seem very contemporary, no question about it, although a lot of the rest of it, you must admit, would fit the world at almost any time in history.
I don't think so, Art. I mean, you take it. We're in 2005 now. We've got more science, more medicine than ever before, and yet, look, one of the things that was pointed out here after that tsunami was that there's 150,000 people dying in Africa every 2 weeks from disease and from AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, in the last 90 years since the First World War, between the First World War, the Second World War, Stalin, Pol Pot in Cambodia, all the other scores of hundreds of pogroms that gone on around the world, we've wiped out an incredible amount of people. Yet we're supposed to be advanced, civilized, technically able, etc., etc., and it's getting worse. The point is when the Messiah spoke about it, he said you were going to have wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases, immorality, lawlessness, people becoming lovers of money, corruption in high places, etc., etc. He said it was going to be like a woman in labor pains. Now, when a woman is in labor pains, as she gets towards the end of the 9 months, the contractions become closer together,
yes.
The pain becomes more intense,
yes.
Until finally
there's a bloody birth and something new is born.
Well, you have just described the world today. You could
Absolutely.
Go back through those various things that you just described, and every single one of them could be argued to be going on right now.
Absolutely. As I say, what we're seeing now are the shadows of the apocalypse. That's the bad news.
What are the shadows? These are the shadows? Those things you just described are the shadows of the apocalypse? All the things that are said to be going on when the apocalypse occurs, those things you just mentioned?
Yes, except when the manure hits the fan, when the apocalypse finally begins, it's going to be, 1,000 times worse. It's going to be intensified 1,000 times. He said it was going to be similar to the days of Noah and Sodom. In other words, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know, party, party, party. And one of the other things he says, by the way, when he talks about wars, famines, he said the wind and the sea raging. And in Luke 21, I have it in front of me, nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about that for a minute. I know you were talking on your program or on Coast to Coast last week or the week before about La Palma.
That's right.
La Palma is this incredible island in the Canary Islands of northwest Africa. It's a volcanic, active volcano, and they know it's going to blow sooner or later. They don't know when. It could be 1 year. It could be 200 years.
Oh, quite right. And they imagine that a portion of it would slide into the sea, putting a wall of water onto the East Coast. That's imminently possible.
Right. Well, now, in the Book of Revelation, which is the Greek word is apocalypse, by the way. It means unveiling, as in the taking of a veil away from the face,
mm-hmm.
to reveal the face, or like pulling back the curtains on the stage to reveal what is in behind. And that's what the apocalypse does. It's revealing the future so that we can see what's coming down. And by the way, we can avoid all this bad stuff coming down. I'll come to that later on. But in the apocalypse, it talks about three sets of judgments. It talks about the seals, the trumpet, and the vial judgments.
I've got to stop you for a second. You said we could avoid all of this.
Oh, yes.
Then why could not the Savior have avoided all that was said to be about to happen to him? Why?
Well, maybe he couldn't. Maybe he had to go through what he had to go through in order to get us to where we are going in the future.
Perhaps so. But that was a, I don't know, it was unchangeable, or it appears to be unchangeable. So why should we not imagine that what you're talking about with regard to the apocalypse is as unchangeable?
It is absolutely unchangeable. It's totally inevitable, but it's avoidable. The bad news is the Titanic has gone down.
I don't understand that. It's unchangeable, but it's avoidable. Please explain that.
Well, I'll come to that later on, Art. The point is that the bad news is that the Titanic is going down. The good news is you don't have to get on it. But just let me get back to this this second trumpet for a moment, because in
yes.
this future judgments, the second one, let me read it to you. It says, and the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood.
All right, we've got a hold there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Something like that, I would guess. That may have been more than just the second trumpet. All right, everybody, stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
It's my private pleasure, midnight fantasy. Someone to share my wildest dreams with me. Imagine
with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Ron in Chicago says, hey, Art, come on. You know we're in these so-called end times. The quickening, hello. Forget the could-be-any-time argument. Let's get as deep into what we can know about these times. And by the way, don't forget to get to how can we avoid it. So, seems like a good idea to me. We'll head in that direction. Patrick, I think it's a good idea what Ron in Chicago here is suggesting, and that is, When this begins, when the horns actually begin to sound, can you tell us what it will be like?
Yeah. Just before the break there, Art, I was reading out a little bit on the second trumpet, which I think is very topical and very important. And I don't think anybody, any other writer or author on end times prophecy has ever seen this before.
All right.
Because when I read this verse before, I was thinking, well, what does that mean, you know? Listen to this. And the second angel sounded, and as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. Now, these guys talking about La Palma, and as I say, I think you had somebody on Coast to Coast discussing it recently.
Yes.
They're saying that when La Palma blows, not if, but when it blows and falls into the sea, it could cause a tsunami that could be as high as 500 feet high, that could travel at the speed of a passenger jet and would take 9 hours to hit the east coast of the States.
That's right.
And by the time it gets to the east coast, it could be 25 to 60 yards high. Now, the tsunami that hit Asia was, what, I don't know, 10 yards high, 15 yards high? They're talking maybe 25 to 60 yards high. You're talking wipeout for New York, Boston, Washington, Florida, the Gulf of Mexico, all the countries in South Africa, the States, Europe. You're talking mega. So all of a sudden, this verse, which was written 2,000 years ago on the island of Patmos by John, called the Book of Revelation, which speaks of things to come in the future, talks about a great mountain burning with fire cast into the sea. And then now we can see all of a sudden what it can do, because there was one of our government ministers came back from Indonesia last week. He was on the television, and at one point he said he saw two large fishing boats on top of one another, and they were 3 miles inland.
Yes.
Now, you know, that's only Mickey Mouse compared to this tsunami, what looks like is a tsunami. And we can understand when it says a third part of the ships were destroyed. We're talking mega here. In fact, what's coming down in the apocalypse, Art, is going to look like the First World War, the Second World War, Pol Pot, Cambodia, the famines and earthquakes in Africa, the tsunami in Asia, and all the rest of the disasters look like an afternoon tea party. Because it's all going to be intensified 1,000 times.
Is there any way to know over what period of time the apocalypse occurs? I mean, is it a rapidly unfolding event or events, or is it, spread over even generations. I've never been clear on that. Are you?
No, the avant-garde writers and experts in this field, of which are nearly all in America, say it's going to last 7 years. Apparently the first 3.5 years will be a sort of a pseudo-peace, because this political leader that's going to rise up in these days, and everybody is going to put their trust in him because he's going to promise peace, is going to have a pseudo-peace for maybe 3.5 years. But then in the middle of that 3.5 years, I think, he goes into the temple in Jerusalem and he starts proclaiming himself to be God. Then, at some point, the pit of the abyss is opened and all hell is going to break loose, literally. And think that's when the muck is really going to hit the fan big time. We're told, for instance, it says that an army from the east, numbering 200 million, are going to cut a swathe and wipe out a third of the population of the earth in their march westward to this valley in northern Israel called the Valley of Megiddo. Now, when Tiananmen Square happened about 10 or 11 years ago, whatever it was, and they put down that little revolt there, the Chinese boasted that they had a standing army of 200 million men. And when this was written, this prophecy was written 2,000 years ago, I doubt if there was 200 million people in the whole world. But now we see all these things emerging on the world stage, you know?
Well, I hate to sound like a cherry picker, but, you know, the earlier part of the program and what we discussed, I had a kind of a big problem with a lot of it, because I think it is mythology. However, when it gets to this part of the Bible, I have some very serious personal reservations that a lot of it's true. Now, I don't know why. I mean, that makes me a cherry picker. I believe some of it. I don't believe some of it. But this part of the Bible, for some reason, something tells me that it's real.
Well, let me just tell you about this guy who's called in the book of Revelation the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to become what is called the Antichrist, who's supposed to be a great political leader. And it says here in one part in Revelation 7, it says, "The beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. And the inhabitants of the world, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world, will be astonished when they see the beast, because he once was, now is not, yet will come again." This is the guy I was talking to you earlier about, who it says in Revelation is the king of the spirits, or the angels, or the spirit men that now reside in this gloomy dungeon or prison called Tartarus. And we're told that his name in Hebrew is Abaddon and Greek Apollyon, which means the destroyer, and it says he goes to his destruction. The reason it says he goes to destruction, most people thought, was because he's going to be destroyed. No, that's not it. He's going to destroy the world. By the end of the 7 years, half the population of the world is going to be wiped out, which in today's terms is about 3 million. But it says...
That would be 3 billion.
3 billion, excuse me.
Yes.
3 billion. Now, it says here twice in this verse, the beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss.
Mm-hmm.
Because he once was, now is not, yet will come again. What that is talking about, as I said to you earlier, Apollyon is the Greek spelling of who we would call Apollo. And Apollo was one of the main leaders of the pantheon of Greek gods way back in the time we spoke about. There's temples all over the place to this god Apollo. And Apollo in primeval times was the epitome of the beauty of man.
Okay,
of
Patrick.
Grace.
Once again, if we can do this, you've described perhaps La Palma beginning this, and then a series of what? You're talking about 7 years of destruction that's going to end up with half of the world's people dead off the earth.
Yes,
one
it's
half.
It's going to end up in a place called the Valley of Megiddo in northern Israel.
Yes, we have a satellite. By the way, when we get calls, folks, you'll have to contend with this too. In other words, you're going to have to ask a question and then kind of pause, because there's a... We're going all the way to Dublin, Ireland here, so that's the way satellites work. Otherwise, you end up interrupting each other all the time. So be careful when you get on the line. So, Patrick, this 7 years, what follows the 7 years of terrible disaster?
Well, it's going to culminate and end up in a valley in northern Israel called the Valley of Megiddo. Now, the Valley of Megiddo is a land bridge between three continents. It's about 10 or 12 miles long, about 8 or 10 miles wide. in bygone days, because of the topography of that area, the mountains running north and south, anybody traveling east from the west would have to go filter through this valley of Megiddo. Mm-hmm. Anybody coming from the east, from India in the east, and traveling to the west would have to go through here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're told that this army from the east, numbering 200 million, are going to be met by a huge army from the west under the power of this guy called the Beast, which once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss. And the reason it says that, by the way, is because he once was, in the days before the flood, when these Nephilim were running around, Apollo was there. Now he is not, because he's locked up in Tartarus, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. That's in the future, when he's going to be released in Revelation chapter 9. And we're told there's going to be a sort of a Mexican standoff between this huge army from the east and this big Western alliance under the power of this political leader, this guy called Apollo, who's going to charm and deceive the whole world, and everybody's going to put their trust in him. And it says here, then they gathered the kings together in the place that in Hebrew is called Armageddon. Then there came flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. No earthquake has ever occurred while man has been on earth. So tremendous was the quake. The great city split into three parts, and the cities of the nations collapsed. Now again, no other author, I believe, has ever brought this to light. What he saw was, listen now, try and picture this in your mind. Flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. When John wrote this, he had to write in terms of his own vocabulary and his own understanding. He didn't have the words missiles, explosions, bombs, you know, nuclear strike in his vocabulary.
And so do you think that's exactly what it was, Patrick? Do you think it represents nuclear Armageddon, the flashes, the apparent earthquakes, the everything you've described? Are
exactly.
those nuclear
flashes
weapons?
Flashes of lightning. You know, when you see the pictures when they're bombing such a place and there's flashes of lightning,
yes.
then you hear rumblings with the explosions hitting in far-off distant places.
Yes.
Peals of thunder and a severe earthquake. Now, he called it a severe earthquake because he saw the cities falling down. And the key to this verse, Art, is, and the cities of the nations collapsed. He called it an earthquake because that's the only vocabulary that he had. But you and I know, Art, that there's only one thing that's going to make all the cities of the nations collapse at the same time. And that is a nuclear strike. Because when these guys meet in Armageddon, there's this Mexican standoff, as I say, then one of them pushes the button, and then the other side automatically push the button, and you have 10, 30, 40,000 nuclear missiles passing one another in midair, and the nations of the earth, or the cities of the nations, collapse.
I wonder if there's any way to understand who are the players in the run-up to all of this. In other words, when you look at our world right now, we have some in the Muslim faith, the very radical, who wish us dead. They have concluded already that we are not going to convert to Islam, and so those radicals who have decided we're not going to convert have now decided that we need to be dead. Is there any reason to believe that this conflict we see now building in the world, Patrick, is going to culminate in what you have just described?
It's all part of the bigger picture, Art. There are, it actually names the Arab nations that are going to attack Israel in this apocalypse time.
Yes, but do you believe this is the run-up that we're having right now?
Absolutely. You know, the writing is on the wall. Wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases, the wind and the sea raging, people in perplexity at the tossing and roaring of the seas. The bad news is it's going to get worse. The good news is you don't have to go down with the Titanic.
Well, let's get to that part. You said it can be avoided, or individually, I guess, it can be avoided. How?
Okay, I'm going to tell you that. But before I tell you that, Art, I'm going to read one other verse to you, which was written 400 B.C., pertaining to this last big battle. It says, written by Zechariah, "This is the plague which the Lord will strike all the nations that fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh will rot while they are still standing on their feet. Their eyes will rot in their sockets, and their tongues will rot in their mouths." Now, what he is describing there, I believe, is nuclear strike. Because when the bombs were dropped on the atom bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki back in 45 or 46, it created such a fire that
within a radius of 30 miles of those bombs, people were burned to a crisp, vaporized.
That's correct.
In milliseconds. And this is exactly what it says here. When these bombs hit, people are just vaporized in milliseconds before they even move. Apparently, there were shadows left on the walls in Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
That's exactly right.
Their flesh will rot while they are still standing on their feet. Their eyes will rot in their sockets, and their tongues will rot in their mouths.
Yes, that sounds like it.
Nuclear strike, I don't know what is.
Okay.
Now, how to avoid it?
Yes.
Well, as I said earlier, it's a bit like this, and I'd like to address this to all your listeners. Suppose for a moment it's 1912. You're walking down the harbour in Southampton in England with tickets to get on this boat to go to a new land of hope and glory and milk and honey. And I stop you and I say, "Sir, Art, don't get on that boat, it's going to sink." You say, "What do you mean sink, Paddy? This boat can't sink, it's unsinkable." And I said, "Well, I have the proof," and I pull out the video of Titanic. Now, I'm sure if you were going to get on the Titanic and I showed you the movie, it would frighten the living daylights out of you. But you'd be very, very, very glad you didn't get on that boat. Well, this is exactly what my book does. I'm showing you the evidence. I don't have a movie, but I've got a book of evidence. And what I'm doing is I'm giving you all the evidence so that by the time you come and, read all the facts, you can come to an informed decision as to what you want to make up your mind to do. Because the good news is that those who believe in the Messiah and put their trust and faith in him are going to be saved from the wrath to come. Right? This is the opportunity to not to get on the boat before the muck hits the fan. And believe me, if you were on the Titanic and it sank and you got drowned, that would look like a welcome relief to what is coming down in these 7 years of apocalypse, because you don't want to be there. You just don't want to be there. So this is what I provide in the book. As I say, there's an escape route, there's a way out, there's an alternative. And a lot of people just have never heard enough evidence or facts to be able to come to an informed decision and accept what the Messiah talk about. Because I say, these are not the prophecies of Nostradamus or Mystic Meg. I mean, in fact, the difference between, people always ask me about Nostradamus, the difference between the prophecies of Nostradamus and the prophecies of the Messiah is like the difference between a bicycle and a Mercedes, except the bicycle has two flat tires and no chain. This is not Mystic Meg. This is Jesus, who is the Christ, the Son of God, the Messiah, and you ignore him at your peril. But the good news is we are saved from the wrath to come. So I provide enough evidence for people to come to an informed decision about that. And I know that a lot of people are put off by religion or by extreme fundamentalist people. And as you said at the beginning, I'm not associated with any particular church. I'm like a lot of Christians. I like a few pints of Guinness. I smoke the odd cigarette at the weekend. I've even been known to break wind occasionally, believe it or not. I'm a normal sort of a guy. But I know what I saw and what God has done for me in my life, and I want to make that available. In the book of Daniel, there are many, many prophecies about the end times which are similar to the book of Revelation. And at the end of the book of Daniel, the Daniel asked the man who told him to write it down, whose name was Gabriel, one of these spirit men. He said, "What do these things mean and when will they be?" And Gabriel more or less told him to mind his own business. He said, the prophecies are sealed up until the time of the end. It's because we're coming into the end time prophecies of end days now that these prophecies are being revealed, that the veil is being taken away and we're being shown this. And I believe everybody's going to get an opportunity to either poop or get off the pot before the muck hits the fan. And I believe that's what my book is going to do, Art. It's going to give people enough information whereby they can make up their mind and then realize that they don't have to get on. They don't have to go down with the boat. You can be saved from the wrath to come. That is the good news.
By belief. By faith.
Yes, but faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. It says that in Romans 10:17. You have to hear enough before you can have that faith. You're just not born with it. That's old Catholic dogma. I just have faith. That's rubbish. I'm not going to believe anything unless you can prove it to me. And I believe my book will give you enough information and ammunition whereby it will prove to you. Absolutely, this is what's happening. This is what's coming down. The writing's on the wall. The Jews are back in Israel. I don't know whether it's 1 year, 5 years, or 25 years, but we are the generation. We're in the last throw of the dice. It's all happening before us. The shadows of the apocalypse are what we are seeing now. The world is a time bomb whose fuse has long since been lit, and the hoofbeats
of the four horsemen of the apocalypse are clearly to be heard with all the, by all those who have ears to hear. You know? And let me tell you that the powers that be, the Nephilim, Lucifer and his mates, they don't want you to read this book. You know, they don't want you to know what I'm talking about. We've all our lives, we've been treated like mushrooms. That's, keep them in the dark and feed them manure.
By the way, Patrick, what is the name of your book?
The name of my book is The Nephilim. N-E-P-H-I-L-I-M. The Nephilim, subtitled The Pyramid of the Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs
$13.99. $13.99. All right, Patrick, hold tight. We're going to get to the phone in a moment. Let people call and see what they have to say. But the message from Patrick is clear. The, what was it he called it? The muck is about to hit the fan. And the trumpet approaches the lips.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Occasionally, it is as valid for us to examine the kind of material that Patrick Heron's bringing us right now as it is anything else we discuss on this program. It is as mythological, hard to believe, intriguing, and certainly possible as anything else we talk about. With that in mind, if you have any questions for Patrick, he'll be right back. By the way, folks, as was requested by a caller earlier, you can reach me at one of two places, either artbell at AOL.com or artbell at mindspring.com. It's not easy, and I try to answer most of my email. I get an awful lot of email, so if you can catch my attention in the header with respect to somehow, you know, telling me what it's all about, so I understand the importance of it. When you get thousands of emails, you've got to kind of use a triage system. So that would be indeed helpful. All right. Patrick Heron is here from all the way from Dublin, Ireland. Our reach is pretty big here. And we're talking about, well, now, the end times. There is just one thing before we go to the phones, which we're about to do, Patrick, and that is this program, Coast to Coast AM, deals many times, Patrick, I'm sure you're aware, in ufology, in these unidentified objects that without question are in our skies and have been there a very long time. They are something, Patrick. We don't know what. That's what we're trying to find out. And I'm sure that from your perspective, as a Christian, you must have something to say about it. They must in some way resonate with the material that you study.
Absolutely, Art. I believe my book will answer all those questions pertaining to UFOs, the paranormal, parapsychology, psychics, tarot card reading. It's all the same gamut. It's all the same thing. All the answers. We're told that we wrestled not with flesh and blood, but from spiritual wickedness in high places. Everything is coming from the same source. The Bible doesn't teach that there's one God, Art. It says there's two main gods. One is the God and Father of the Messiah, the true God, and the other one is called the God of this world. And he has many other appendages, Lucifer, the devil, the adversary, the deceiver, etc. And you'll probably remember the time the Messiah was taken up in a very high mountain to be tempted by the devil. And it said he showed him all the glories of the world in a moment of time. Now, it takes a lot of power to do that. And he said to the Messiah, he said, all this power will I give you, and the authority goes with them. For it was delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. If you'll bow down and worship me, all will be yours. Well, I'm wearing a shirt here, Art, and I couldn't give you this shirt if I didn't have it. So we're told that in one place he's called the God of this world. He is the God of this world. He's the one with the power and authority over the world and everybody and everything that is in it today. And that's why the place is so screwed up. And you're under his influence and power until such time as you believe in the Messiah. Then you're redeemed, you're taken out, and he can't touch you anymore.
Well, at the moment he's directing me to go to the phones, and I'm powerless not to. First time caller line, you're on the air with Patrick Heron in Dublin. Hello.
Hi. Art, I just want to say that it's been a pleasure to listen to you and George. You've become companions for me at night. I've been listening to you now for about 6 months, and I enjoy your show very much.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Patrick, it's refreshing to hear another fellow believer on the radio. And my question for you is, do you believe in a pre-tribulation rapture, and is this the avoidance that you were speaking of earlier?
It didn't sound like it, but maybe it is. The rapture is a modern myth, or is it? Patrick, is there going to be a rapture? Is there going to be the great sucking sound that takes all the true believers up before all of this begins to happen, thus avoiding all of it?
Yes, that is the ticket out of here. And I know some Christians teach that we have to go through the tribulation and that we have to suffer terrible persecution and all that. But that contradicts what's written in Romans and in Thessalonians and also in John 14, where it says specifically that we who believe are saved from the wrath to come. End of story. Now, people who say that we are to go through it, they must know more than Paul knows and what the Word of God says. We're saved from the wrath to come. You will remember, by the way, Art, you remember that great expression, in my Father's house are many mansions.
Yes.
I go to prepare a place for you. Well, the Lord said this at one time. He said, in my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place, I will come again and take you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. So he's away in this place. He has his sleeves rolled up. He's mixing cement, and he's preparing a place for a lot of people who are going to come. So that's where we're going. In the book of Hebrews, it says, Abraham looked for a city in heaven whose builder and maker is God. And then Paul in Corinthians wrote about a house in heaven whose architect was God, and it was not made by human hands.
Yes, well, there is no specific language, is there, regarding this rapture? I mean, it's not really in the Bible, is it?
Oh, of course it is. It's written in plain English in Thessalonians chapter 4. It says, we which are alive and remain shall be caught up to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. It's mentioned several times.
The timing, though.
No, the timing. Now,
It says no man knows the day or the hour art.
Well, of course. But
it's giving the overall picture, what we spoke of earlier, with the wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases.
But in terms of the timing being ahead of, just ahead of these events.
Well, there's no timing for the rapture, but
yeah.
We're giving the broad outlook, the broad brush strokes of the end time scenario.
Okay.
And that's what we're seeing now. The Jews are back in Israel. Everything is placed. The writing is on the wall.
Got
so
it.
Whether that's 1 year, 5 years, or 25 years, I don't know. I believe it's going to happen in my lifetime.
Okay.
Let me just finish that thought because, you know, it speaks about this celestial city, that this is where the Messiah went to. I mean, you ask questions very often, I know, on Coast to Coast. Is there intelligent life on other planets? Yes, there is. There's a place out there called heaven, quote, end of quote. In it resides, and this is painted in very clear words in the book of Revelation. It says that there's the Messiah sitting on the right hand of his Father. It says they're surrounded by 24 other thrones with 24 elders on them. We don't know who those guys are.
Patrick,
and an innumerable amount of these spirit men called angels.
Patrick, is it your view that there are or there cannot be other intelligent life forms in the universe?
Well, I think these are the other intelligent life forms I'm speaking about.
In other words, you don't think there are other intelligent life forms on other planets in the universe?
Besides who's in heaven.
Besides who's in heaven, yeah.
I don't think there are. I think we're the only show that's going on at the moment. That's
the only
my
show
personal
now.
Belief.
Well, maybe your personal belief is bolstered a little bit by the fact that so far, SETI hasn't found anybody.
SETI?
SETI. You know what SETI is?
No.
It's the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, Patrick, and they have radio receivers that are searching the skies and have been now for many years looking for any sign of it, any intelligently generated signal. And they found nothing so far.
Well, I'm not surprised at that. Remember when, I think 4 or 5 or 6 times in Genesis, when it talks about the creation, it says, let us make man in our image. And it says, in the image of God made he man. We look like them. These guys look like us. When they asked the Messiah about his father, he said, anybody who's seen me has seen the Father.
Maybe you'd like to answer this question, Patrick. The Catholic Church, specifically from Rome, actually, more or less, bullied their way through environmental concerns to get a very, very large, powerful telescope installed in Arizona. Why do you think Rome would want something like that, Patrick?
I haven't got a notion, Art. You'd probably know the answer to that better than me.
I don't. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Patrick Heron. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, where are you, sir?
In Sandusky, Ohio.
Okay, far away.
And I'm a college student. I was working on a paper a couple months ago and came across something in the Jerusalem Post about, I don't know if you're familiar with the Sanhedrin, Patrick.
The which?
The Sanhedrin.
Oh, the Sanhedrin, yeah.
Yes. Well, I found an article January 12, 2005 in the Jerusalem Post claiming that they want to claim a king for Israel. And I don't know if you've been aware of this, or if this has been brought to your knowledge at all, but you can go to Google and just type in David Sion, and it'll bring up the article for you.
Yeah, don't know.
It's pretty amazing that prophecy's coming through here. So.
Well, you know, the Jews are still waiting for the Messiah to come the first time.
Right.
But all that was prophesied, too.
Yeah, I think it's very amazing. So.
All right, Colin, thank you.
Thank you.
And have a good night. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Patrick Heron. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, dear, you're on the air all the way to Dublin. So if you have a question, sort of go ahead and pause it and then wait for a second.
All right. I was wondering if he had ever read in any Nordic mythology where they had about the doom of the gods, where there was going to be 3 years that would seem like one long year of Fimbulwinter, and if he had... what was his take on the Nordic gods and Loki, who's supposed to be bound in chains underneath the earth?
Well, that's all part of the same stuff I was talking about. The Nordics had their gods and their giants and their mythologies just the same as we had here in Ireland. In fact, I have a little cottage on the west coast of Ireland, Art, a beautiful cottage looking right over the sea with a little salmon river nearby and beautiful mountains around. It's gorgeous. And there's a heap of stones about a half a mile away from me in the hill, and it's called locally as the grave of the giant. In Irish history, it records giants being in Ireland. In the famous Balliol at the Battle of Moytura, that they found Oscar Wilde's father wrote a couple of books on ancient Neolithic tombs and cairns and souterrains around Ireland, and he talks about a church outside Castlebar in the county of Mayo, where 100 years ago they found a tomb and with an inscription on it. It said, "Here lies Dinan, King of Ireland, Anno Mundo 1798, which is sometime B.C., and inside the tomb was a skeleton 12 and a half feet long.
So, you've got the little people and the big people.
Yeah, we've leprechauns and we've big lads as well.
Caller? Anything else?
Yeah, what is your take on Fimbulwinter, where there's supposed to be three long years of winter that's without any summer or anything in between? There's supposed to be like the summer of the axe, the winter of the wolf, the winter of the axe, and the winter of the sword. Where
I don't know, caller, anything about that. All I know is what's written between Genesis and Revelation, and it does say that the stars of the heaven are going to be all messed up and are going to fall and it's going to be rolled back. So a lot of hairy things are coming down, you know? A lot of bad things are coming down the track.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Patrick Aaron. Hi.
Hi, Patrick. Bruce in Portland, Oregon, hailing from the west coast of the U.S. here.
Yes, Bruce.
As I listened to you, first of all, let me mention that I was brought up a Christian in a very strong Christian family, and along about the time that I went to college and began to study other religions, began to see the great truths that were running through all the great world's religions, I began to realize that oftentimes we get so conditioned by the religion we're brought up with that we filter everything through that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tonight, I've heard you take an incredible mishmash of ancient texts and writings and filter them through a Christian mindset and come up with a worldview of today's events that, to me, is not a very useful, seemingly very useful tool to help us find our way through the times we're at. Do you realize that there are many, many great teachers here today, like the Dalai Lama, people who've written incredible books of just beautiful, pure truth, like Eckhart Tolle, Gary Zukav, Conversations with God? I mean, there are wonderful books here and now that address what is needed to heal the wounds and the divisions of our world now. And by taking the Christian mindset and putting that forth as the way to view the world, you're in fact creating an even greater divide that is going to tend to bring on those very things that you predict in all of those ancient texts.
So he's indulging a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Say again?
He's indulging a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, I would say that by taking all of the ancient texts and interpreting them through the Christian mindset, which has a tendency to take Revelation, for instance, and interpret that as a great tribulation and apocalypse coming, that in fact, by hanging on to that Christian mindset, saying that is the way to view the world, and ignoring the billions of people in the world that see the world and the universe through the eyes of other religions with great truths in them also, that we're in fact accentuating that divide that will bring on the very things that he is talking about. And we have such great, wonderful teachers here today, in this moment, in this day, that are showing us the way, that are teaching wonderful truth that can help move us towards the brotherhood of mankind someday.
Well, I rather think Patrick will refer to those as false prophets. Patrick?
Well, I wouldn't like to insult the gentleman by being so rude, Art, but what I would say is that, you know, the difference between the Messiah, Jesus, and all the other great leaders and teachers such as Muhammad, Buddha, Vishnu, etc., is that he's the only one who was proclaimed to be the only begotten Son of God, and he's the only one that got up from the dead and that is coming back. None of them are. And he made a statement once. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And contrary to what you're saying, that, you know, there's going to be, hopefully, by the through going through the teachers of these other great men, that we're going to lead to peace on earth and the brotherhood of man. I'm sorry, that's totally opposite to what the Messiah said.
Not at all. He said this and even greater things you will do. He meant us to be the messengers of peace to the world today. That's what he meant.
Absolutely, and
I
would hope I'm playing my part in that to that degree. But he also said things are going to get worse.
Yeah, but you have to realize that there is great truth in people that were in other cultures and other religions, that the same truths, the same great truths, not beliefs, the truths, are woven through all of them. And we have to get beyond the belief systems that divide us and come to see the core truths that unite us. That is the great work of this age that we have to do,
caller,
in order to avert that
caller,
go ahead. Yeah.
Don't you see the impossibility, though, of what you're saying?
No.
As you listen to Patrick tonight, you understand how much faith he has in the exact word, the literal word as it's written, right?
Much as does the Muslim.
Yes.
Or,
Yes. So don't you see then the impossibility of what you're saying?
No.
The impossibility of casting aside the literal word and finding instead the basic truths that would unite us all. You are asking for the impossible.
It is not impossible, and it is the great hope. It is what the future and the new paradigm is. The old paradigm is going to die an ugly death. I really believe that. It won't be pretty, but it has to die. And I'm afraid, Patrick, as much as you're well meant, you are a part of the old paradigm of the belief system, and the belief systems have been fighting each other for centuries. The new time that we have to move into, the new paradigm, will be one that sees the truth that resides within the souls of all men.
Caller, hold on. And Patrick, hold on. I'll bring you both back. Bottom of the hour from the High Desert, I'm Art Bell.
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and my guest from Dublin, Ireland, Patrick Heron. We'll get back to him in a moment. We have a very interesting caller online, I think, with a spectacular idea. Absolutely spectacular, but I maintain, nevertheless, impossible. When we have people in the world, this is a very interesting caller. When we have people in the world, right now we do have these people in the world, who believe so thoroughly in what they believe in, that in fact it is their belief that if they cannot convert us, then they have to kill us. And they have concluded we are not convertible, or at least enough of them have, that they're actively trying to kill us. What I'm trying to get to here, caller, is that is the depth of their faith. And this morning you've had a sample of the depth of Patrick's faith. So what you're talking about is really impossible unless you can, I mean, you're welcome to try and convince me or Patrick, but I doubt you will. Go ahead.
It is absolutely not impossible. First of all, an act of kindness is an act of kindness no matter what culture or religion. If you don't know the other person's language, an act of kindness takes place. Both people recognize it. An act of love. I mean, the things that are the truth, you know, what we could call the fruits of the Spirit, are universal.
Those unite us, yes. But that does, yes, not dispense with the depth of the faith and the great divide.
Yeah, and let me point out that the very, you know, Jesus who Patrick is speaking of, he was killed. His life looked like a failure because he stood for beliefs that those around him at that time could not understand and would not go along with. And so they killed him. And yet, that truth that he taught lived on and even touches us now. So if there's truth in what I'm saying now, even if terrorists kill me or my family or others, that truth will still live on, and that truth will still transform the world in time. Maybe not right now, but I'll tell you, it is beliefs and religions and cultures that divide us.
All right, caller, hold it there. I've had you on for a long time. Patrick, go ahead and respond to that man.
Well, I agree with him insofar as the world is going to be reformed. But it's going to be reformed after a bloody rebirth, just as the Lord Messiah said, it was going to be like a woman in labor pains. Things are going to get worse before they get better.
What he said, though, was that the universal truth in these various religions will come together and stop all of this.
No, that's not going to happen, Art.
Yeah, I see.
And
I
the proof of the pudding is in the eating.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, the difference between the writings of these various religions or any other book, either secular or profane, like James Joyce's Ulysses or War and Peace or the Bhagavad-gita or whatever it's called, none of them are prophetic. The only book that's prophetic is the Bible, is the Word of God. And he said things are going to get worse. People, I believe in the humanity of people and the basic love of people, but you're talking about evil, hatred, forces, spiritual forces that are working through people. And no matter how much, you know, we might go up to somebody who hates us and, you know, give them money or make good deeds, you know, a lot of them just want to slit our throats.
Yes.
And the world is going to end up in the Valley of Megiddo and Armageddon. That's where the muck is going to hit the fan.
Right.
And after that, the Lord is coming back and he's going to put stuff. There's going to be a bloody rebirth into paradise regained.
All right.
And
first,
that's when things are going to get
first
better.
Time caller line, your turn with Patrick Heron in Dublin. Hello.
How you doing, Art Bell?
Fine.
This is John from Honolulu. I want to tell you, first, the Bible says, give honor where honor is due. Thank you for putting this show on the air.
You're most welcome.
It is wonderful. My friend Patrick, my brother in the faith, keep it up, man. And may I suggest, continue to mention the name of your book. You are a man of faith, major faith. Please continue to mention the name of your book.
All right, Patrick, do as he asked. By all means, plug your book.
Thank you. The name of a book is called The Nephilim, N-E-P-H-I-L-I-M, Nephilim. And my name is Patrick Heron, H-E-R-O-N, a wading bird.
And I assume, Patrick, that your book is available on Amazon.com and all the normal...
I'll tell you, it's published by Zulon Press, X-U-L-O-N Press.
Mm.
There's a toll-free number for it, Art.
Okay,
1-866-909-BOOK. That's 1-866-909-BOOK. And you can dial that 24/7. You can go to Amazon.com and punch in Nephilim, N-E-P-H-I-L-I-M. It costs $13.99, but it's cheaper on Amazon. And if you want a signed copy from yourself, from yours truly, from me, you can go to my website, which is www.NephilimApocalypse.com, NephilimApocalypse.com. And by the way, if there's any other radio stations or TV stations or newspapers that want to interview me or review my book or do anything, then I'm available. And also, we talked about Graham Hancock earlier, Art, and you interviewed him several times, you said.
Yes.
Well, he has a fantastic website called GrahamHancock.com. And I'm on as author of the month, guest author of the month for March. So there's going to be a discussion about the Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse there.
By the way, I
never quite mentioned the Pyramid of the Apocalypse.
Hmm.
Very briefly, Art, may I?
Yes.
Yeah, remember I spoke about the Messiah in my father's house or many mansions, and he was going to this place, and Abraham was looking for a city in God, in heaven, his builder and maker was God. And at the second last chapter of the book of Revelation, it talks about the new heaven and the new earth, the one that's coming. That's where peace and where righteousness and, you know, we're all going to love one another, and we're all going to end up, everything's going to be hunky-dory. You know, we're going to be able to drink glasses of wine with the Messiah again, thank God, because I love red wine, I like fishing. And
really?
He ate fish in his risen body, and he said at the Last Supper that he wouldn't drink red wine until he met us in paradise. So I'm looking forward to that, you know.
Well, I'll tell you this. If the Nephilim come back and they go after our women, they're going to find out there's been a big change. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Patrick Heron. Hello.
Hey there. I killed it.
Good. For quick. Thank you. Yes.
Jim from Edmonton, listening on the Internet.
Yes.
Yeah, no particular faith either. I guess I kind of share that with Patrick there, a researcher.
Well, I'm not convinced. I'm not at all convinced. I think Patrick has a very great deal of specific faith.
Well, I don't think any of us can get rid of that, or we wouldn't continue to walk the earth. Anyhow, nice work, Patrick.
Thank you.
You might be interested to get a little bit more into William Henry stuff to fill in some Nephilim information. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Nephilim are a group of aliens. Showed up a period of time ago, and
see right away you're in trouble with Patrick now.
Well, hold on.
I asked him about aliens.
I know. I don't. Well, we can go on. I just come with some quick background before the question. So the Nephilim show up, and with just a group of other beings on another planet, and there's a whole story behind that. They probably left their planet, and apparently they were in trouble. Just a little segregated group. They come down here. They run into humans. Humans, these tiny little prehistoric beings. And you know what? It's easy to control people that you know more about when you're a type 1 or type 2 civilization. Type 0 is very predictable. I know I'm very predictable. I know people are. So they show up. They seem like gods. They get them to build some pyramids. Why do you build a pyramid? Well, type 0s go, well, we need energy. You build a fire. That's where they stop. Type 1s build a fire to keep warm, and they go next to pyramids, because pyramids invoke earth power, same as Edward Leitskalnin. He was another. He could have shown us how to do that. If we look at his work, you'll see that. Same thing. Okay. By the way, telescope, church. You guys are saying the church is building a telescope?
I said that.
Yeah, they're watching for the new star.
Is that what it is? All right. Thank you very much. You would have argued, well, your response is going to be obvious. I mean, I asked you earlier about aliens, about life on other planets. We now know there are planets around many, if not most, suns. Patrick, and you said no.
I agree with your caller, Art, and I agree with you.
How could you possibly? While ago you said that no, there is no life, there can be no life, we're it.
No, what I said was that there is life, intelligent life on other places, and the place is called heaven. And this is where it is.
Yeah, but not. But then I said, but not okay, heaven, but not on other planets. And you,
well, I
and
don't
you
think
agree.
There are. I think we're the only show in town.
Yeah, I heard that.
People
I know
can
I
call
heard that.
These Nephilim aliens or extraterrestrials, but what the Bible describes them as are men, fallen spirit men who are not constrained by the physical laws of physics as we are because we're flesh and blood.
Nor
so these
are
guys are aliens insofar as they came from another place. They came here and they built the pyramids. And I still can't get to this New Jerusalem. As I said, we're told, given the dimensions of this New Jerusalem in the second last chapter of the Apocalypse, and we're told its length and its breadth and its height are the same. It's a pyramid in shape. This is the place that the Messiah went to when he said, in my Father's house are many mansions. This is the place they talked about when they looked for a city in heaven. And it's this future pyramid city that gives the answer to the riddle as to who built the pyramids and why.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Patrick Heron in Dublin.
Hi, Art. Thank you for taking my call. This is Leah from Parkside.
Hello.
Listening on WDEL.
Right.
Hello. I had a couple of questions. First of all, when I hear you say about when Jesus said that in my Father's house there are many mansions, you don't really explain what you think that means. To me, I think it means there's room for everybody of all religions. What do you think that means?
I don't think he thinks it means that.
I think I just answered that. He said he was going to this place, but he also said, in my Father's house are many mansions. Or rather, he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. But at some time in the future, it talks about judgments. It talks about great throne judgments in the future. And it says everybody's going to be judged according to their works. So even if people haven't heard about Jesus, I think a lot of people are going to be okay because of just what they do in their lifetime. So, you know, the door isn't exclusively shut to just everybody who believes in Jesus Christ. Although, having said that, he did say, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And
well,
that leads
me to my second question. There are so many contradictions in the Bible, and that's because it's been rewritten by quite a lot of people, a lot of people in the Catholic Church and other people throughout the ages. We don't know all of who the people that have rewritten the Bible. We don't even know what it looked like to begin with, and I don't know how you can take it as gospel.
Well, you know, it's up to whether you believe in the Messiah, in Jesus, or not. And I would have to disagree with you. I don't think there's any contradictions in the Bible from Genesis or Revelation.
You don't think anyone's rewritten it throughout the ages? Anyone's messed with it at all?
You think
they're just translations, caller.
And that word has simply come through absolutely untouched.
Oh, there are. But they're just simply translations. You come back to the original Hebrew and the original Greek. I mean, there's something like 17,000 Greek copies of the New Testament dating back to as close as 60 AD, 90 AD. Over 17,000 of them. There's no other book is like this. And Greek is very, very mathematical and very precise, you know.
What
you
about the Dead Sea
really
Scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels? You totally
Pardon?
Discount those?
Repeat it, caller.
I said, what about the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels? Do you totally
discount
those?
Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls back up exactly what I'm talking about. The Dead Sea Scrolls, they reckon, date to about 300 BC, and they are, what are they? They're large parts of the Old Testament and of the Book of Enoch and other ancient writings, which all write about this Messiah that was going to come and going to fulfill all these prophecies. And as I said earlier, he fulfilled 25 specific prophecies in the last 24 hours of his life, and all those prophecies can be found in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
And the contradictions throughout the Bible do not bother you in the least.
There are no contradictions. Tell me what they are.
For one, in the Old Testament, it says an eye for an eye, and in the New Testament, it says thou shalt not kill, or turn the other cheek. Jesus says to turn the other cheek.
The difference being that the administration or the period that was addressed to in the Old Testament is different from when he came in. You see, when he came in, he ushered in a totally new era, the time of love, the time of grace. The time of love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. He said all the laws hang on these two. That's why it's a new testament, a new covenant, a new thing. He came in with the law of love and showed people what the true God wanted for them on the one hand, you know, and what the other God, the God of this world, wants to do to them. He said, the thief comes not but for to steal, to kill, and to destroy.
On the other hand, he said, I am come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And also one of the great verses that I love in the New Testament, in John 8:32, he said, they shall know the truth, and the truth shall set them free.
But when many people read like truth, the last caller said, many people know many truths. And you're talking about, you were talking about other religions that, that are willing to die for their beliefs. Weren't the Crusaders one of those religions? Weren't the Christian Crusaders part of that? They were willing to kill for their beliefs, weren't they?
Yeah, but I know. But I mean, look at what the Roman Catholic Church did to Christians for a couple of centuries in the Inquisitions. I mean, the original people that went to America on the Mayflower, the reason they went there was to escape persecution by their own governments because of their religious beliefs. You see, we're always looking at people, but what you've got to do is look behind the people and look at the spiritual realities, the invisible spiritual realities. There is a devil, there's a lot of evil spirits, and they hate.
But I don't believe there's a devil. A lot of people don't believe there's a devil.
Well, look around you.
Look around me. I don't see a devil.
Well, I'm saying that the one with the power and the authority of this world, hold on, and the one that we're told in Hebrews with the power of death is Satan, the devil. He's the one who caused the tsunamis, the earthquakes, the famines, the disease. Jesus Christ went around healing people and feeding them, not killing them.
Well, then why does he let a devil? If that is true, then why is he letting this devil, or whoever you think it is, do these horrible things?
Well, I don't know. Maybe we need to go through all this world. Maybe we need
to see. Not in your Bible?
Hold on, can I finish? Maybe we need to see all these things in order to come to a point in our life where we go looking for something else and seeking another truth. I don't have all the answers to that. All I know is God knows what he's doing. We started
at
8.
He knows what he's doing, killing 166, letting your devil kill 166,000 people.
Well, he's the one with the power and authority over this world. I mean, they killed Jesus Christ, you know, too.
Well, he must not have that much power if the devil it seems like he has more power than your Jesus.
No, he doesn't. And when Jesus Christ comes back, the war is already over, you know. Once Jesus Christ got up from the dead, it was a fait accompli. We're just going through the trials of other things. And maybe we need to see, maybe we need to go and seek and find in order to find out this truth. And that's what I'm making available in this book, The Nephilim. I'm giving people enough evidence to convince them that this stuff is what's going down. And the next major thing that's going to happen in the world is what a lot of Christians call the rapture. And things are going to get worse before they get better.
Well, I can't take the pessimistic view of what's coming that you do. I just can't. I can't believe that there's a devil that has that much power, that there's someone that's evil, that has that much power over people.
Well, you know, all I'm saying to you is that my book is not a book of pessimism.
And I can't believe in a God of hatred.
It's a book of hope.
In a loving God.
Well, you know, honey, if I showed you to Titanic and told you not to get on it, is that positive or negative?
It's positive.
Well, that's exactly what this book is doing. I'm showing people what's coming down the line.
Well,
I don't have all the answers, and I often wonder about the devil and why he exists at all. But
you're relating this to the Titanic. You're saying if you showed me the Titanic and told me not to get on it,
you're relating that
to your book.
So
you're saying through your book, you're telling people not to be involved in this Armageddon that's coming.
What I'm doing. Is showing them, first of all, that this is exactly what's going to happen. The Jews are back in Israel. The writing is on the wall. The next thing that's coming down is going to be the apocalypse. But we don't have to be there. There's an escape route and a way out.
All right, Patrick, and we've got to get out of here. See, what's going to happen, Patrick, is Nephilim are going to come back, and they're going to run right into somebody like that young lady right there. Patrick, I want to thank you for being here. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. I guess it's pretty much sun up daytime in Dublin by now, right?
Yes, the top of the morning to your heart. And I want to thank you very much for having me on your show. And I'd like to thank Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs, who told me to get in touch with you.
All right, my friend.
It's been a real pleasure.
Good night. And so there was Patrick Heron from Dublin. Ladies and gentlemen, that's The Weekend. From the High Desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride.
longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert.